This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Boosters have fired, and we are ready to take this Weekend Confirmed ship right into orbit.
I'm fired up.
Fired up.
Yeah.
Wow. You are fired up, Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Good today.
Don't say wow so quickly into the show. Come on. talking
Someone was upset with me last week. Did you see that? By the way, my name is Garnet Lee. This is Weekend Confirmed. Excited to be here. Got a great show. Tons to talk about. Gamescom, PS4 announcements, FIFA with every Xbox One in Europe.
Oh, my God.
Games we've been playing.
Gamescom is in full effect.
And Jeff Cannata.
And I'm here. And I'm excited. We might even have some Yoon soon. We might call him Siyoon.
And the Siyoon soon.
Yeah.
And the triumphant return of Christian Spicer.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. Thank you.
Christian and I have a big announcement, don't we?
You're getting married.
We're getting. Wait, what? No.
September. I should have known
He's
the date.
Married.
You should have. You couldn't just spring that in. You clearly don't know it.
I'm looking
Double
at
Jump
phone
is coming.
Right now.
It's happening.
It's actually going to happen,
it's
guys.
It's happening. We
September 3rd.
September 3rd is the first episode.
And
Tuesdays.
Every Tuesday in
awesome.
September.
Yeah.
2 days before my birthday.
Nerdist channel.
Nerdist.com. I mean, YouTube.
It's a birthday present.
Sweet, guys.
/Nerdist.
That is awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah.
We were very excited about the episodes. It took longer than we thought to get them out. But
they're great.
We're both. I think I'll speak for both of us and say we're both very proud of them.
Yeah,
and we think they're really, really funny and fun. And I hope you guys all watch them. Don't worry, I'll remind you.
No surprise. Hey, I also want to celebrate a listener. I think this might be a first for Weekend Confirmed listening while on the move. Pudgy Ninja took place this past weekend.
He's slightly less pudgy ninja now.
Donner Lake open water swim. That's a 2.7-mile swim.
That is
across
no
the lake
joke.
In
that's
open
a
water,
long swim.
Right? They even said, I went and looked it up just for fun, and it was like, we will remove you if you have not, we'll remove you from the water if you have not finished in 2.5 hours. Did finish. Awesome. Way to go, Pudgy Ninja. And took his waterproof touch in the water, listen to Weekend Confirmed across the lake.
How cool is that,
that
man?
Is badass.
I love that. I always listen to podcasts and audiobooks when I'm exercising, and I'm now training for a triathlon, so I'm doing swimming, but I've never actually tried to listen to something while I'm swimming.
It's crazy.
Intense. I love that he did that. Congratulations, dude.
I like thinking that he's using it as a marker, like every break. He's like, oh crap, I'm halfway. It's a 2-hour show. Oh, swim.
That's a long swim, dude.
That's crazy.
2.7 miles? Yeah.
Iron Man is, I think, 3-mile swim and then, you know, 120-mile bike ride and a marathon.
And a marathon. It's insane.
So he did.
Ryan Schneider does those all the time.
Insane.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm doing the triathlon I'm doing is 1-mile swim, and I'm scared of that. So for 2.7 is hardcore.
So yours is 1-mile swim and then what run and what bike?
20-something bike. I think it's 26 or 28, something like that. And then maybe 23. I don't know, something around there. And then a 10K. So it's about 6-mile.
Run. Brother, you're still plenty
how,
badass.
How many milkshakes?
A lot afterwards.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Still plenty badass. All right. So.
Oh, I have another. Sorry, I have another update. That I just wanted to. If we're talking about me, I want to do a Kanata update just because it's funny and I'm shocked. And loyal viewers of the show will know that I took a second, either last week or the week before, I can't even remember, to complain about my my acting life.
Yes.
And
Did you book it?
I booked it.
Awesome! You're the Wii U dad.
It's ridiculous. No, not the Wii U dad.
Oh.
The mentalist part.
Oh,
it's even cooler.
That's
literally
awesome.
One line. It's you'll blink and you miss me. But it was funny because I never talk about that stuff ever.
Or you'll have Time Warner Cable and you just won't have CBS.
Well, that's true too. But I guess I have to complain about things.
Congrats,
more often.
Dude. High fives.
Thank you.
Here's a tip.
Look for me on The Mentalist coming
look
soon.
Look right into the camera.
Oh, I will.
When it's just be like thumbs up.
Searing
eye contact. Yeah.
Look right through that camera.
Anyway, so I thought that was hilarious because I was like, oh, you know, 15 guys for a one-line part and anybody could have gotten it. And then I got it. So whatever.
Now you'll get to be like on the stage with some really cool people.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I'm there with, what's his name?
Who plays Sexy Hot Guy. Yeah.
Oof. Anyway, so enough about me. More about video games.
Oh, that's his character's name. right, is Jane.
Yeah, Patrick Jane, I think.
Patrick Jane, yeah.
Will you be in the game version?
Unlikely. All right, so where should we... You know what? We won't hold back any... Although, as I say, is last week, you know, someone was really thought I was legitimately giving you grief over World of Warcraft.
Right.
Which for those of you who don't know, like, not only have Jeff and I known each other for forever, but like we've both been through varying degrees of World of Warcraft addiction. Mine not as, you know, not as far as Jeff's, who, you know, did the, what was the instance?
Project Lore,
right.
With Alex and...
Where you guys were literally playing World of Warcraft as a show, which is a pretty testament to how big that game was.
Yeah.
And obviously you're into it, but now it's really bled over because we have Hearthstone.
My addiction, I mean, I haven't played WoW all week because I'm playing the beta for Hearthstone. And
so
it
this
is
week, if you want to know,
amazing.
If you want to know what we're talking about, this week, Blizzard took the wraps off of and opened up its beta for Hearthstone. It's a collectible card trading game, digital online.
Yeah.
In the World of Warcraft world, and that's really, I mean, it's pretty simple stuff. I've started playing it as well, and I'll jump out there because I want to hear you talk about it. And I'll say this. I've not really been hooked by a playing card game before, but this is pretty damn addictive.
Well, stepping back a second, you know, when they announced this game as their next Blizzard game, I think myself and other people kind of thought, oh, well, this is a kind of a side project, not real serious.
Yeah.
It's a free-to-play kind of like I said, side project.
It'll just be a thing.
It'll just be a small
they've got
little
like 20,
release.
They got 20 folks working on it. No big
right.
thing. They're
it's
like
not
put
a
it
big
together.
Major Blizzard game. Well, I'm here to tell you, this is going to be a big major Blizzard game.
Work done. Work's done.
It is every bit as polished as any other Blizzard release, and every bit as addictive. I don't think Blizzard is a company that makes video games. I think they're Heisenberg. I think that all they make is the most pure crystal meth of gaming that there is. Every one of their games is
I want the good. Give me the blue. Give me the blue. I want the good.
They're Heisenberg, dude. They're the Heisenberg of game companies.
Well,
does that make Valve the Gus Frings?
Yeah, right. Clucking Chicken or Brothers Chicken. Los Hermanos. Yes. You know that I love Magic the Gathering.
I do. As soon as I started playing this game and got drawn, and by the way, I think one of the things that they did masterfully about this is their tutorial loop that brings you into the game is one of the best, most smoothly done.
Simple.
Bring you into the game loops I have ever played.
Now,
it is masterful in how well it layers on another piece, but keeps you playing. You're having fun while it's handing you this new piece, you know, the first time through. And it's really quite clever how they do it, because you don't feel at all like you don't have the entire game at your hands in the first play. But by the time you finish the sixth, you realize they've added something new each time here, and it's only added to the game.
Now, to Wizards of the Coast's credit, they have a very good tutorial mode as well. And it's a whole series of tutorial games that you play in the new Magic 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like a tutorial. It feels like you're in
class.
Jeff,
I got to tell you, I tried to play Magic on my iPad 2 years ago and last year, and it never caught me. And Hearthstone immediately was like,
"That's the
I want to
Magic
play this game
of Blizzard."
More.
I said this to Dan. We were talking a little bit earlier, and I said, Hearthstone is to Magic the Gathering what World of Warcraft is to EverQuest. They took this thing that already was and stripped away all the things and just got to what's great. They do, and Blizzard is so good at just getting to the crack, getting to making the fun, you mainline fun, and it strips away all of the cumbersome parts.
Yo, kid, what are you doing over there? I'm mainlining fun.
Yeah. So I can talk in detail a little bit about the things that they did that make it, I think, a much easier experience than Magic is to get into.
So, by the way, should I feel like a noob for enjoying this card game so much?
No.
Is it a stripped down card game, or is it a full fledged card game?
I think stripped down is wrong. Streamlined is more correct, I believe. It takes away all of the stuff that makes Magic cumbersome. And smartly, it's designed as a video game.
I like that part.
Magic is sort of trapped by the fact that it's a game adapted from a tabletop experience. So you have all these timers that are happening all the time. You have all these waiting for somebody to do something in response to things. They don't need to worry about that in Hearthstone because the game is designed differently. It's not meant to be sitting across the table from someone interacting with a person. It's a video game where you're doing actions and the person is doing actions on their turn. So
how about I do this? Because I would love to know from your perspective how well I actually understand it. Because I think there's a lot of people out there who are curious about card games that haven't played one before.
Mm-hmm.
So let me kind of give you my understanding of Hearthstone, and then you can give me like the details about what's cool or not about it. So if you've ever played one of these card games, the basic idea is that you, the player, build your card deck, and your card deck has a group of cards in them. And you have a library, a giant stack of different cards from which you can choose. And each of these cards costs a different number of points to use. In this game, they're called mana, but we could just call them points because there's really only one sort of currency. And so you need to have...
And that's a key difference from Magic.
Oh.
Which, of course, has five different...
Oh, it has different lands, right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
One of those things that they strip down, and you lose some strategic complexity, but what you gain is ease of access and a ramping up of power that is consistent no matter the constitution of your deck. And I think that is a huge innovation. It's almost a step backwards from something, but it's also makes the game way more accessible.
Yeah.
Because with Magic, you have these five different lands. You have, green, red, black, white, blue. With Hearthstone, all you're dealing with is mana. And mana is decoupled from being in your deck. So
Forgot in Magic you're drawing. Yeah.
So you have to worry about the constitution of your deck having the right number of land cards in it, the right relationship of different colors if you want to have a different colored deck.
But isn't that, you're painting it as a worry, but couldn't you argue that as a glass half full thing? Like you get to manage all this. It's so much more complex because it's more fun because you're doing all this. And now with this game, well, all you're looking at is mana.
Oh, but it's important. I completely agree with you. I'm hoping you understand what I'm saying is that you're losing some of that complexity,
sure,
which is, I think, what a lot of Magic players really like. But you don't end up losing... I think the trade-off is a really interesting one that Hearthstone has made because it makes the game faster and more consistent. Because what happens in Hearthstone is both players get a new mana point every turn.
Right.
No matter what.
So here's the deal. Back to the explanation is you've got these cards from which you're building your deck. And I think this is why, to me, comparatively speaking, in Hearthstone, I feel much more like my tactical maneuvering with the cards really figures out what happens. Because what happens is that you've got all these cards, and the cards have a cost on them and points, and the points are mana. And every round, the game starts off, you and your opponent, neither of you have any mana. And every turn, you get an incremental one more and what you had refilled. So you start off, you get one mana. And so you could play a card that has a 1 point mana value. Next turn, you get your one back, it refills, plus you get another one. So now you've got two to play with. Next turn.
So you can play 2-1 cards or 1-2
cards. Or 1-2 card, exactly. Next turn.
Provided you have them in your hand.
Provided they have come out of your deck into your hand, because
right.
You start off with 4 cards.
Well, you start off with 3 and you draw 1 to start your turn.
All right, so you start with 3 and then you draw 1 card. And so now you've got these cards, and what comes out of your deck depends on how you've set up your deck. So, when you're setting up your deck, you might want to wait for one, and you might want to have it more heavily weighted to 1 and 2 crystal cards, or you might want to play for endgame, because what happens here is the game accelerates. Because those 1 and 2 crystal cards, they're okay, but once you start getting to 3 and 4 crystal cards, shit gets real. Things start really happening around that point.
And I think one of the things we have to make real clear to people that are sort of new to this thing is when you talk about building your deck or constituting your deck, that is something you do before you start playing.
Yep.
But you don't have to do that. The game comes fully equipped with pre-made decks that don't require you to make that kind of investment.
If you go online with that pre-made deck, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Not necessarily.
Really? I've gotten destroyed.
Well...
destroyed.
Of course you're going to get destroyed. I think it's a lot like what...
Like, by the way, any more of these hunters with that damn multi-shot card, and I just want to like blow my brains out.
It's a lot like...
That thing tears you apart.
Well, there's a lot of things that tear you apart. But there's, rock, paper, scissors for everything. But it's a lot like what Leahy used to talk about with StarCraft, is that the goal that they're trying to do with the matchmaking service is for you to win half your games and lose half your games. That's how you know it's working correctly. Because you shouldn't be ever matched where you're always going to win.
So my concern then is that the people who are in the beta right now is that it's too small of a subset, and all of them are super intense, because every time I go online and play, I find that my card set that I've built so far is just completely outclassed. That I come up against players who have seriously much more powerful cards, like multi-shot for the hunter or different weapons for the warrior, where they're just able to really circumvent the stuff that I have, and I don't have enough power cards to power.
But that makes sense for a beta, right? That's going to attract the enthusiast.
I don't think
someone that's passively.
And maybe it's
because
I hit the ranked. I mean, I did hit the ranked button, so maybe I should drop out of the ranked ones. But I would think in ranked, it would still use the Elo system. And
well, okay, so there's a whole lot of factors at play here. One of them is chance is always something takes part in these games. Whatever you draw into your hand is going to be a factor.
True.
Second is whatever level you've leveled up and what cards you've actually unlocked into your deck for you to even play with. And third is the mode that you're playing in, because different modes allow you access to different cards. So let's step back and kind of continue to explain how the game works, because
so there's a rapid escalation from turn to turn, because once you get about three or four turns in, suddenly there's a number of options open to the player, because now you're playing with four and then five and then six mana. And now you have
up to 10.
Up to 10.
Yeah.
And you've suddenly got a lot of options. You could play, so let's say you get to where you have seven mana. You could play three one crystal cards, a two crystal power, like a magic attack, and still have, is that five? So you could still have two more points left to play another card. So you could do that, or you could look down and go, wow, I've got this seven crystal badass, and right. I'm going to drop him right now out on the field. But you have to think about what's going to happen and what the opponent could throw at you. Are you playing a mage? Could they, you know, for two crystals, throw a polymorph if they have it and turn your 7/7 attacking
into
a sheep and then wipe him out instantly? Yeah. And have you have like just totally lost that? Or are they not in a spot where they could do that? I mean,
well, okay, so.
So you get to that point.
Thematically, I think one of the important things to talk about, if people haven't had experience with these games before, is that what you're doing is you're playing as a character. And brilliantly, I think, this takes place in the World of Warcraft universe. So you're selecting one of, what is it? I don't know. Even though 9 or 10 different classes.
It's like 7 or 8. I mean, but the thing is, you know the character classes. You know, right. You know the shaman, but the shaman with their totem. Boy, I was playing a guy the other day, and at one point he had four totems on the field.
Right.
I was like, this is
he
just
has a power where he can
like,
two
this
mana.
Is just like PvPing a damned shaman. He's like,
but it's
throwing
so
all these freaking
brilliant.
Totems.
It's so brilliant how they've managed to make each of the classes feel like that class in WoW. And they really have that feel to them. So anyway, so you select that class. That is the character you're playing as. That character then dispenses from the deck creatures onto the field of play. And that works exactly the same way as Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering, you're a planeswalker. You're the player, and you're putting creatures out on the deck to attack the other player. So
on the battlefield,
on the table, right? Yeah, so you only win or lose the game by whittling down the hit points of the player, or in Hearthstone's case, the character class that you're playing as. Magic starts with, you start with 20, Hearthstone, you start with 30. So killing monsters on the field gets you no closer to winning. They're only impediments between the player and your attack and the player you're playing against.
But
let me just say this. But the key difference between Magic the Gathering and Hearthstone, and I think this is huge, this is a huge design decision on their part, is that in Magic the Gathering, all the monsters down in front of you can block. And you as the player, the defensive player, gets to choose how you divvy up those creatures to block things. Okay? In Hearthstone, you do not have that choice as the defensive player.
Only
the offensive player gets to decide what is being attacked, and that is the end of the story. The only thing is which characters have taunt, which require you to fight them before you can fight the player. It's a huge difference.
Except for player skills and weapons, which circumvent that, which totally throw your defense off, because you may set up like I have with a bunch of character with a bunch of beasts that can taunt, so you know, okay, I'm going to get some taunt guys. I'll be able to get some taunts out on the table. But then they could be completely circumvented by a character class that has a number of attacks that just circumvent your line and attack directly to the hero.
Right. Now, I'm only speaking from perspective of Magic the Gathering. I haven't played Pokemon. I haven't played some other CCGs. So I don't know if this is unique to Hearthstone, and I might be corrected on that. But I think it's a huge... Clearly, this game is Magic the Gathering through the looking glass. And the idea that they've removed that defensive player choice is, I think, a major factor in the alacrity of the game and the video game-ness of it. So in Magic the Gathering, you have four phases. And how you manipulate those phases is extremely important in your strategy. So you can play cards down on the table in two of the phases. You have an attack phase. So you're always having to decide how you're going to play within the context of a phase. Hearthstone does away with that completely. You can do whatever you want in whatever order you want as long as it's your turn. There are no cards, so as far as I've seen in Hearthstone, and I've played a shit ton of it, that are in response to something. So in Magic the Gathering, oftentimes there's, I'm doing this. Are you going to do anything about it? No? Okay, then I did it. In Hearthstone, you never have to wait for that. The computer never has to wait to see what the other player is going to do. You, when it's your turn, you get to do whatever you want to do as long as you can do it. So, and again, this is, I think, the difference between adapting a tabletop game and creating a video game. Because adapting a tabletop game where it's all about that interaction across the table, that is part of the joy of Magic, but it slows down the video game version. Yeah. And you have to have these arbitrary timers of, anything gonna are you going to do anything? No, stop! Okay, let me select a card from my thing and I'll throw it down. But removing that, streamlining that process makes Hearthstone play so much faster, and you just go, 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 and it's a much more exciting, fast-paced attack sequence.
Dude, it's a fast-paced game, period. I mean, for a card
very
game,
fast-paced.
It goes by fast, yet at the same time, because of both the pace of play and the rapid escalation of warfare based off the mana going up and up and up. I mean, you get right to six crystals pretty quickly and suddenly it's real. And the next thing you know, if you're playing someone who has a number of, let's say that they have a number of cards they've set their deck up. So, I mean, I played a number of hunters lately. Obviously, I'm luck of the draw or something. But hunters oftentimes have the ability to throw mid to low level cards that also summon another card along right with them. So I can be, you know, what I'm looking at my space. I'm like, okay, you know, I've got a attacker or two out. I'm starting to get some mana built up. I'm getting close to six or seven. I've got something I'm getting ready to drop, maybe like a spell booster because I'm still using the mage. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, the next turn, they drop a couple of characters who summon a couple of wolves or something. The next thing I know, I'm facing like six or seven beasts on the next turn, and I'm counting up across there, and I'm like, he's about to throw 15 points of damage at me, and I don't know what the hell I'm going to do about it.
Right, but that decision process that you as the attacker get in Hearthstone that you do not get in Magic the Gathering, because it's given to the defensive player of, who am I going to attack? Am I going to attack the player? Am I going to attack this monster, that monster? The only time that's stolen from you is when those monsters have taunt and they force you to attack them. So it's a really interesting decision, because now am I just going to try to kill him before he can kill me? Is it a race? Or do I... you know, focus all my energy on his big bomb that's in one of his big monsters that's on the table. It's a really interesting thing.
Now, and you can lose. They can go back and forth, because I had a match where I thought I was going to win the race.
Oh, me too.
Because I was like blowing right there. I'm like, okay, I've got this guy's defense circumvented. I'm just going to sit here and knock him off. I'm going to do 6 to 8 points of damage for the next three rounds, and then I'm going to be golden. And by the second round, I was like, I'm in trouble.
This morning, I lost one where he was down to one hit point, and I had 15 hit points.
Whoa.
And he killed me in the last round.
What happened?
He pulled out a big bomb at the end, and it that doubled the attacks of some of the guys on the table. Oh, and
those are brutal.
Yeah, but another
guys,
thing
if you can tell, the game is quite.
I love
quite
it. I love
enrapturing.
It.
So what's but before we dive deeper into it, what's the monetization like? How
well? Let's that's a whole other conversation. Let's get to that in
Jeff,
one second.
Have you bought any cards yet?
I have in a beta. I've paid real human being money. But let me just say one other thing.
So is that a conversation that we have with your family alone in an apartment, and you show up like, I'm going to camp? Well, Jeff.
You're not going to camp. Wait, what? But I brought my bathing suit. No. The other really big point I want to make, and it's something we've talked about a little bit, but I want to make it really clear, is that this the way mana is handled, and that it is not a card in your deck, that you don't have to play down land cards or anything to create potential to play other cards from your deck, it's huge, because it means that the ramping up of power is equal and consistent for both players. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Magic, there's often the case where I have been putting land cards down out of my hand, and I get to the point where I don't have any more land cards in my hand. And that now my turn, and one of my phases, I get to play a land card for free. I don't even have one in my hand. So I'm shoestringed because of just poor chance of not drawing enough land cards when I had to draw cards, right? And again, this is a trade-off, because it's also a part of the strategy of Magic is characters that can pull lands out of your deck, out of your graveyard, et cetera, et cetera. But in Hearthstone, everybody is getting a new mana point every turn. So it makes that ramping up consistent. So you know that you know exactly what he's got, and he knows exactly what I got, potentially. Now, of course, you still do in Magic as well.
There's
still
ample randomness, because what you pull out of your deck of cards, so you've got 30 cards sitting there, and who knows what you pulled out of those 30 cards.
Right. And it also allows there to be a smaller starting hand, because you don't have to worry about having mana cards in your hand. It just, everything is streamlined. Get to the action. And that is what Blizzard does so well. Now, the second thing Blizzard does
so well. You log in with your credit card number. That's your username is 4217-7441. I don't
know. Yeah. it is that part. And that is, it is so devilishly devilish.
But Jeff, I've been earning cards by playing. Why do I need to buy cards?
Well, it's not buying cards, although they do sell cards to you, and good, great, amazing, rare cards are going to cost you, just like they would in any kind of real CCG.
But don't I get them from playing?
You can. That's one way to do that. I think that's cool.
I mean, I won a card that like made a big fanfare for like being a priest rare card.
Well, side note, the way all of the feedback that they give you in this game is fucking brilliant. It is so rewarding to unlock a pack that you know, you bring it over to the table, you set it on the table, you unlock it, it explodes you unlocked a pack, and then all your cards come out and they lay out
upside down. So you have to
flip each one over and see exciting cool thing of what you got. It's
hey guys,
so
it's
brilliant.
Jeff Gnott, I've got a unboxing video for you. Why don't you step over and check out my cards?
Yeah, no joke. But buying cards isn't even the worst part.
What is?
Arena, which I'm sure you haven't gotten to.
No, what is that?
Okay, in the beta, I don't know if this is going to be the case with the real game, but in the beta, Arena only locks when you get to, when you unlock all the classes.
Okay.
So you have to unlock the classes by beating that class in practice mode. Practice mode only goes up to level 10. After that, you can't level your character past level 10 unless you play real human beings in either play mode, which is just sort of a regular PvP, you know, multiplayer mode, or the arena, which is where the real action is. Now, I don't know how the hell this is any different from online poker, because the only difference is that you don't get real human being cash money as a reward, but you get gold, which is fucking equivalent to cash money. You have to pay to start the arena. You got to pay
every single time.
$2.
Like every time you go into the arena is $2.
Yes, the first time's free, as it always is when you're dealing with Heisenberg.
I tweeted out that as these games continue, game company execs are going to have to carry pagers and only use payphones because they're dealing fucking drugs.
I don't
so
even know how it's
$2
legal.
Every time just to play arena.
So here's the juice of the arena. Are you ready to get on this fucking hype train? Are you ready to try the H of this action? It's like the old days. Put your quarter up on the thing and see if you can beat me in Street Fighter, and I get to keep playing until I lose.
Uh-huh.
You get 3 losses in the arena. 3 losses, you're out. But the cool thing about the arena is you don't bring your fucking deck in. Oh, no, no. It's a draft. So you start, you pick one of 3 character classes that are randomly chosen for you. Hopefully you've leveled up that character class. You better level up all of them because they all need to be leveled. You pick one character class. Then you start getting choices of 3 cards and you start drafting. And you're going to draft your whole 30-card deck in choices of 3. So you better make that. And it works just like a Magic the Gathering draft. If you've ever gone to one of those in real life, they're fucking fun and a blast, and I couldn't recommend them higher. In a real draft sitting at a table, you unlock a pack. Everybody at the table unlocks one pack. You pick one card out of that pack, and everybody passes the rest to the left. And then I pick one card, and we pass. Okay. And so you constitute your deck.
$2 a play?
$2.
I kind of love that, though, because there's a reason why brawlers as video games don't work anymore. Because, like, playing Turtles in Time, it's boring because you have unlimited lives and there's no stake in it. Putting your quarter up and, like, quartering my...
Okay, that's cool.
I would love it if it was a quarter.
$2 a play for three deaths? And you could die three times. I mean,
but you don't have to play it.
You don't. There are two other modes just waiting for you to have lots of fun. But do you want to get the best shit? Because you get the best shit by beating real people in the arena. And
not. But what about beating them in play mode?
Beating them in
play
mode.
There's a ladder there. I mean, you can.
There's
like,
a ladder there.
Play.
There's medals. You can try to level up
so
your
that's
thing.
That's not cool.
But you're not going to get the real gold, the real deck unlocks, which you can then bring over into play mode. It's devilishly brilliant.
You've been playing Arena, haven't you?
Of course I've been playing Arena. Of course I've been playing Arena.
So what's the right price for this then?
Less than $2.
But no, because you've been playing Arena.
I know, but
it's more than $2.
I'm not proud of myself.
Oh my God. $2 a play, three
You
deaths,
get three deaths,
lives.
And how many wins you can rack up before you die
well,
three
it's
times.
Like 60
and if you
cents
die three
play.
Times, that deck gone. You got to reconstitute your deck now. You got to go back into the draft.
Well, of course, you have to start over again.
Yeah,
and that's another $2.
So there's going
right?
to
that's
be
a, is that another $2?
Of course.
So after you lose your three, so basically it's $1.99, three losses, start over. Whoa!
Now you're seeing it.
I can't.
Now
wait
you're to... seeing the Heisenberg.
Now I think I'm going to uninstall.
But like I said, those other two modes are super fun. Again, you can go into expert practice mode. You can do
Seriously,
play. You can
dude,
play.
That's
person to person, but you can't, you know, if I want to play you on my friends list, I was playing some of my buddies last night. I don't earn anything. I don't level up. We can play all we want and have a good time, but we're not going to level up.
How do you even play on your friends list? Because I didn't see that option.
Well, you have to, because it's a beta, you have to be beta friends, not because it's on a different set of servers than the actual Battle.net. You have to be on, you know, it's just like the public test realm and WoW. But
$2
it is,
to play.
And the other thing we haven't really touched on that is so well done in this game is it's got that polish.
Ladies and gentlemen, Activision stock looking like a better and better deal. It's $16 or $17 all the time.
It's is the visuals. And they outclass Magic the Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalkers on every level. Again, I love Duels of the Planeswalkers. I think it's a well-made product. I love Magic. I think it's great that it's out on every conceivable platform. You can play it on your iPad and all that stuff. And it plays great. This is truly a video game, and they get it. They get the fact that it's a video game, and they bring all that stuff to bear. You get...
Well, they have those assets, too. I mean,
well, it's all new art. It's all new art. And it's... beautiful. It's so gorgeous and everything feels chunky, and when cards flip over they have depth and weight, and everything attacks land and things shake and move. It is really satisfying, I think, to play. And the environments themselves are beautiful. You have this cool top-down view of waterfalls and stuff, and it's all from WoW. And as much as I know about, you know, Jace and oh man, I'm blanking on all the freaking Magic the Gathering. What's his name with the G?
I have no idea what you're
all the
about.
All the planeswalkers. I know them all, but my brain's not working. Anyway, as much as I know that lore and I know all those guys because I like Magic the Gathering a lot, it's a whole different story when I've played for the last 10 years inside the world of Warcraft, and then
oh, they got you,
Uther Lightbringer comes up, and I'm like, oh, well, I know that guy. I've done quests for that guy. You know, like this, these people and characters and creatures, and when a Murloc comes up, yeah, all of it are my friends. All of it are people that I've dealt with. You know, they're
Murlocs
all,
are my friends.
Come home, Jeff. Just
it's
two,
very
$2.
Familiar.
Come
it's,
on over.
All right, how about we take Wonderful. A break so that Jeff can
cool off,
relax.
I think Andrew Yoon showed up too.
He has. So we'll bring him in. We can talk about some Gamescom. I don't know. What else do you want to talk about? We can talk about some Wolf Among Us, which Andrew has checked out.
Ooh.
Next from the Telltale folks.
I also want to talk about Gone Home at some point.
Got some
too,
Gone Home.
We didn't talk about that last week.
Got some XCOM The Bureau. Could even talk about some Madden. So stick around. We have a lot more to come and three more segments to go on This Week in Confirmed. We will be right back.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, everybody, welcome to the mic joining us, Mr. Andrew Yoon.
Sorry I was late, but I was falling asleep during that last segment.
Oh.
Garouk! Garouk is the name I couldn't
think
of.
What the hell's a Garouk?
He's a planeswalker. He's the green planeswalker. He's badass.
So I got a question from a listener that'll sort of lead into a couple of subjects here. And this one's from Kensington Evil, says, some reviewers have criticized Brothers gameplay as a weakness of the game. We can accept games with a subtle story element that adds flavor to great gameplay without much complaint, but will we ever accept games with a great story whose gameplay, or perhaps interactivity is a better word, is used subtly to enhance the story? Goes on to say, I can't help but wonder if it, being Brothers, would have lost something if it had tried to focus more on gameplay like a traditional puzzle platformer. So this brings to mind not only Brothers, which Jeff still has not played, I can tell from the look in his eyes.
It's good, dude.
I haven't finished it, yeah.
Which will make baby Jesus cry, because it is fantastic. You played it.
Yeah, it's good.
So there's a whole group of games we can talk about here. We can talk about Brothers.
Gone Home.
About Gone Home, clearly. And then Walking Dead, obviously not a game that was at all in service to the gameplay. It was absolutely in service to the story.
Heavy Rain.
And now we have The Wolf Among Us. So, you know, that's...
What's up, Wolf?
It's like, oh no, everyone's looking at me. I guess I have to start talking now.
Well, we can talk about all three of these games, but I thought it'd be nice to sort of just give us an idea first where The Wolf Among Us is coming from, what it's doing since everyone... I mean, gosh... Walking Dead unexpectedly took home Game of the Year nominations and wins, and was, I say unexpectedly because it was such an interactive novel-like experience and not what we associate typically. I think it actually is the answer.
Why can't that be gameplay?
It is gameplay.
I mean, I don't understand this question. Like, it's the gameplay, it's not traditional gameplay, but neither was left trigger aim, right trigger shoot before Call of Duty made that mainstream. Like, why isn't
How would you respond then to the question that he posed of reviewers knocking Brothers for its game mechanics? How do you feel about the game mechanic in Brothers?
I thought it was great. I mean, I think
I did too.
And I haven't
you haven't played Brothers.
I haven't finished Brothers. I played some of it.
Like, I don't understand. I mean, I guess it stems from the older adage that gameplay is king, right? And Nintendo champions that, and it's all about gameplay is king. But to me, I mean, I'm playing Walking Dead. I'm making those decisions. That is the gameplay. Brothers, it's brilliant when your thumbs are working in concert with one another. I mean, you guys have talked about it, I'm sure, right? But one stick
I only talked about it a little bit. I was actually waiting for Jeff, because I wanted to talk about more. I think that one of the beauties of it is that while the controls are fairly simple in that you just use a stick for each player, and then the bumper on the front of that stick is their interaction button. And yes, it lumps things under interactions, but what it challenges you to do is to be able to concurrently control two players on the screen at the same time. And when it works, it's weird, because at first when I was playing it, I had this gulf to overcome of like, I'd be trying to run a guy one direction, you'd run the other direction. But then there are times when you stop thinking about it and it starts working. That's really magic.
Like, I don't know if you or if listeners have played the piano or taken lessons. Like, I have very rudimentary piano skills, but it's like when you just get over that hump and like you're sitting there and all of a sudden both hands are doing their own thing and you're doing great. And until you realize that both hands, you're like, oh, fuck.
And as soon as you think about it, you're dead. Because it's funny because I play piano and this moment you said that, a light bulb went off. It is exactly like that. You're like playing and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, this is awesome. Shit.
Yeah. And that's how Brothers felt to me. Like, I'm playing. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm going to pick up the cart with this and I'm going to have this guy climb the vine. I'm going to throw the rope down with this. I'm going to do that. And then I'm like, this is so great that I'm doing this with, oh, crap. What am I doing? And my thumbs are just like not working anymore.
It's like me and sex.
Okay.
Little tip. Don't use your thumbs.
Oh, I thought you just said little tip. Put a period.
Tell me about the.
It's good to stay emotionally engaged like that. Wait. I love how Jeff's like shifting out of the Brothers because he's like, I don't want to talk about them. Please.
Well, I relate. I stole it from Wolf Among Us, but I just feel like I understand the question because it's not gameplay in the sense that, you know, Mario is a gameplay or Pac-Man is such gameplay, but I just feel like it's semantics. Like, it is a game.
It's semantics in the way that the conversation about our game's art, that's all about semantics, because there's high art, there's the concept of art, you know, the auteur and whatnot. So I think it's best if we don't spend too much time focused on, well, is that really a game? Because then it's the same question as, well, is that really art? And that just gets really tricky because
no,
everyone has...
Yes. Yes to both. Move the fuck on.
Because everyone has a different definition of what those terms mean. But yeah, Wolf Among Us, it's Telltale's next game. They're the guys that made The Walking Dead. And this is based on the Fables universe. So I've actually never read the comic, but...
Vertigo, right?
Yeah, Bill Willingham.
But yeah, it's apparently super long running. And I guess the cool thing about making an adaptation of that franchise is that because it takes characters from Fables that you already know, you don't really need to know what the series is about. Like, if the big bad wolf is talking to Little Red Riding Hood, you already know who those characters are. Sure, they might be, like, grittier in the comic book, but you already sort of have this inherent understanding of who these people are supposed to
be.
But
how will we ever know how Spider-Man got his powers and what happens to Uncle Ben if they don't show us that in every single movie version of that story? Who's Little Red Riding? What's her origin? Where'd you get her hood from?
The difference in Fables is that all of the storybook characters were kicked out of storybook land and have to live in the real world pretending to be human.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, so you play... the big bad wolf, so Bigsby is his name.
Bigsby Wolf.
And yeah, so this actually takes place about, I think, apparently 20-something years before the comic kicks off, so this, like, 1980s New York. And Fables have to be costumed, and they have to look like humans, and they have to follow the law. And then I guess the way the game kicks off is... a fable gets murdered, and apparently in this world, fables are really hard to kill. Like, in the first few moments of the game, you actually get into a fight sequence, which I guess is trying to show, like, how dynamic the gameplay is now. It's still QTEs, but it's very much The Walking Dead. So, you know, when you're not having these, like, arbitrary action moments, you know, you're walking around exploring the environment, and
isn't it
ultimately
funny that that's the way you
decisions.
Describe them too? Arbitrary action moments.
I mean, for me, I never really liked the action moments in The Walking Dead because they were the ones that actually took me away from the gameplay because they had failure states, mm-hmm. and so Lee died, and like, ah, that sucks. Oh no, he's all right. I'm just gonna rewind 5 minutes. Like, for a game that's all about choices and consequences, there was no consequence whatsoever.
Well,
to getting,
but some of those were
so
tense
killed.
And fun.
Well, no, yeah, I understand that they were there for the mood, but it's unlike, say, Heavy Rain, right? Where, like, there is no fail state, right? If you die, well, the story just keeps on going, right? Like, that the consequence of you dying is that your character is dead. Oddly, that consequence never happens in The Walking Dead. So, you know, I talked to the Telltale guys, you know, it's like, oh, this action thing looks cool. So, like, you know, Bigsby is he's getting a fight with this big guy, and like, you can, like, when you grab him, you can, like, choose, like, where to throw him. So, like, you know, oh, I'll throw him I won't throw him at the big soft couch. I'll throw him at the sharp knives in the kitchen, you know. And it's very violent. So, you know, it certainly has that impact. I feel like more so than even The Walking Dead, just because of how, like, I hate to use the word visceral, but that, yeah, it's just so graphic and gruesome.
Well, so is the comic.
Do you mean, yeah, I was just saying, is this as much a just a reflection of the art style?
Yeah, and I flipped through the comic, and yeah, it really does seem to translate the art really well. The Walking Dead, in no means, was a pretty game. It was a, you know, it got the job done, right? The cel-shaded look, you know,
I mean, I think it was a conscious decision because they wanted to separate themselves from the comic book that is black and white and has seen, I believe, artists, and then the TV show. Like, we wanted to say, this is our world.
Yeah, and it also does a really good job of hiding some of Telltale's...
Telltale signs?
Yes. because, I mean, if anyone's ever played Jurassic Park from them, you sort of know that them trying to do any semblance of realism is wasted. So going for that comic book look with The Wolf Among Us works. And actually, I would say it's really pretty. I wouldn't say that about The Walking Dead, but I would say that about The Wolf Among Us because I think the color choice is really unique. Mm. It still has some of that, like, janky animation that Telltale's known for, but just the detail, though, it really does look like a comic, and I'm just sort of surprised at how well everything translates. And once again, it's so distinct looking. There's a lot of purples. There's a lot of neon. It's very...
Did they talk about why they changed the name?
I did ask them, like, hey, why isn't it called Fables?
Why don't you use that thing that
game
you have that everybody knows about?
And,
or at least some people. I mean, I didn't know about it, but at least has some name recognition to the brand.
I mean, the cynical answer is there's already a game called Fable. So it would have caused...
But then it stopped Activision from releasing A Walking Dead.
So that's true. And I'm sure that worked out well for them, riding on the coattails of Telltale's game.
Well, but there you have Walking Dead and Walking Dead both having paid licenses. And here you have Fable as one game in one world, and Fable something entirely different.
But the more like PR-y answer that I got, the one that is probably less true than the fact that there's just a video game called Fable that's really popular, is that because the Fables franchise spans so many different characters and so many different arcs, it doesn't necessarily follow one particular character.
Then I want Fables : The Wolf Among Us. It just seems silly. Like, they're gonna call like the zombie shit game or zombies and shit or whatever. It's like, well, Fables is a big thing. Like, I know people that are super passionate.
So you want The Walking Dead, zombies and shit?
Yeah, that I'd play. Yeah. Otherwise, not.
Well, I think Fables has less brand recognition than The Walking Dead, though.
Oh, certainly. But
I think, you know, Fables : the video game, or even
the comic book, the game.
Even what you suggested, it might make the game seem less approachable than it actually is.
But now this game is by the makers of The Walking Dead. : The Wolf Among Us, like,
which actually, considering it won Game of the Year, that actually works out pretty well for them, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people are just going to give them the benefit of the doubt one, you know.
Well, or at least they'll give it. I mean, at least it gets you a look because
from
you know, like, wow, this is really
Back
good.
To the Future,
well, yeah, and especially
Jurassic Park,
once again,
and The Walking Dead,
especially because it's episodic, like all their other games. You know, you can just pay $5 for the first
episode.
And
they're staying in that. You know, you called it visceral, but they're staying in that little more, you know, adult, mature vein, as opposed to Sam and Max.
Although,
because, look, they did a great job with Sam and Max. These
guys
did an awesome
frustrates
job
me
with
that Max. That, you know, walking around in a New York environment from a Telltale game, I'm like, oh man, it's really like, it makes me upset to know that Sam and Max is probably never going to come back at this rate.
I bet there'll be a little nod to them somewhere in the game. I wouldn't be surprised if there's something that's like a Easter egg for fans to Sam and Max. That'd be cool.
I mean,
stuck
I feel playing like Poker Night at the Industry.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like that would sort of disrupt that world. But I guess Fables is inherently a world that almost any character can really partake in.
Any public domain character.
Exactly. and so they asked me to not talk about spoilers, which is unfortunate because I do think that the story setup that they have for the first episode is really intriguing.
Cool.
But in terms of how choice operates, I think one thing that the game is missing, which made me, I guess, less interested in it is the lack of a Clementine figure. In The Walking Dead, immediately from the first episode, you sort of knew what your goal and objective is, and it's like, oh, I have to take care of this girl. And
but you're a private eye, right? I mean, Bugs, is he still a private eye?
Yeah. He's essentially the sheriff of Fable Town,
Solving the murder is the
and solving the murder seems to be the initial thrust. I find it unlikely that that'll be the arc that encompasses all five
emotional
episodes.
Connection. Then
it's like the X-Files. That's just the begin. It's just the lead to get him in.
You know, he's already a badass, and I feel like for me that's less relatable, right? He's a really cool character, and this world is really cool, but emotionally, I haven't found myself too invested in him yet, and I think it's only because I only saw like the first part of episode one. I'm sure, you know, later on I might get more invested in the universe, but it's definitely harder to get into than The Walking Dead, I would say, just because. It lacks that, you know, and sure, the mystery is cool, but on the other hand, like I guess for me, in many ways it lacks that immediate emotional resonance that I found in
The Walking Dead too. It's you're a human, you're playing as humans, you're able to make that connection to this could happen,
you feel immediately threatened. The way The Wolf Among Us starts, you're fighting this big badass guy that gets hit in the head with an axe and he doesn't die because he's a fable. And so that sort of establishes the world's like, oh, well, fables are sort of badasses, and like you're like one of the baddest of the badasses. So like I feel like the threat isn't immediately there. What they're doing that's really interesting is that there's sort of a sense of time. So that's how choice really operates in this game, where eventually during key moments in the episode you'll have to make a decision as to like what you'll investigate first. So it's not really like a CSI game where you have to like find all the evidence and make sure you put all the pieces together. You'll probably figure out what's going on like automatically through the events of the game, but who you like where you decide to go first will have consequences. So for example, you know, let's say you have a damsel in distress on the Upper East Side, but you have your friend in trouble on the Lower East Side. You know, who are you going to go to first? And which one of them is going to turn into Two-Face? You know, like just that's pretty much the decision making in that game.
And spoilers
if they keep doing comic book adaptations, I really hope they do Powers. That's the one I think would work so well as a Telltale game, especially if they manage to keep the art style of the Michael Oeming. Is that how you pronounce it? Oeming?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oeming? I don't know how to pronounce
it. I mean, I know they have other games that they announced. They announced like a lot of comic book games all at once, and then it's taken them a while to start bringing them out. And now they're just churning them out. I mean, the fact that Walking Dead Season 2 is coming out this year, and we have, you know, an entire season of The Wolf Among Us.
I still think it's cool, though, just in general, that you know, to answer the question we started off with Kensington Evil, is that I think that there are far more games, and if you want to call them interactive entertainments, that are taking this approach of, hey, we're building a interactive storytelling experience with you, which is, you know, that's exactly what Gone Home's all about.
Did you play it?
I watched Ariel play it some, and then there were parts where I wasn't intruding on her. And I be honest, I've been playing Madden for review, and I've been playing some Bureau, and I just was kind of preoccupied. So,
well, it's
I don't have a lot to contribute other than to help you talk about it.
It's a real special game. I think I would recommend everyone play it, and it's I don't know of any other game like it, and it's hard to talk about it without spoilers, but I shall do my best. The thing that's so wonderful about it is that it's simple. It is extremely simple, and it's not trying to tell you about saving the world from an alien invasion. It's not trying to tell you about the zombie apocalypse. It's not, you know, putting a gun in. There's no shooting. It's a first person game, no guns in it. It is, you know, you come home from being abroad. You are abroad? No. But you come home from being overseas, and you come to your house, and you see a note on the door that says, we're not home, but come inside. And you just explore the house that you grew up in, that you haven't been in for a long time, and you learn the story of your little sister's last couple of years in high school. And that's it. That's it. And it is so simple, but so grounded and realistic. And I think that's something that video games haven't really ever tried to do. As realistic as some games get, it's a realism that has some supernatural element for the most part.
Talking about grounded, I got a sense that for a number of folks playing this, both anecdotally listening to them on the internet and watching Ariel, is that this for many people is analogous to Ready Player One. And it has like that same sort of connective tissue of I relate. Obviously fantasy, but it like relives all of these moments that you connected back to. You like, oh, I get what. Oh, Rush. Oh, D&D. Oh, I get.
Well,
all these connections.
I'll tell you this.
And here, I felt it seemed like that was like working at least for Ariel and Otto folks. It's like they're replay. Oh, I remember this. I'm relating to this.
It was a nostalgia trip.
Well, there is definitely a big part of that, and it's funny because I was feeling very nostalgic for the 90s recently, just for no reason. I was just like, oh man, I love the 90s.
Go to Portland.
And, well, this game, A, takes place in Portland, and B, it takes place in the 90s. So,
were they in the 70s then, or the 80s, or was it the 90s?
No, it was the 90s.
No, Portland, he's saying, what is Portland? And yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, but Jeff didn't get it.
I didn't. I'm still on the uptake on this one. But, so, I want to say something that could be viewed as a possible tiny, tiny, tiny spoiler, but I think it's something that's magical about the game. It's not going to be
New
a story
New York City
spoiler.
Rises up.
So if you haven't played Gone Home yet, skip forward 20 seconds. Okay. There's the wonderful thing about this game is that it is super simple. And for example, there's one moment where you come to a bathtub. And it has red splotches on it. And you're trying to figure out what happened to your sister, right? And in every other video game, every other game, that is going to be the blood pattern. And you're going to find, oh, shit, something crazy happened. In this game, you turn around and there's a bottle of red hair dye. And it constantly does that. It constantly subverts your expectations of, we're in a big video game. Oh, my God, there's going to be some supernatural thing happening. And it's actually just this really simple, wonderful little story. And that's, I think, what's so special about it. I would also like to say that because of this game, I think primarily, and something we've talked about a lot on the show, I'm really in favor of video game experiences that I can play in a sitting.
Yes.
I think that the experience of playing Gone Home, where I sat down, I started the game, and when I stood up, I had finished it.
Yeah, it's long. It's like two and a half hours, long movie length.
I found that to be really special.
Are you okay with that for $18?
It was a little expensive, I thought, for that kind of experience. I would highly recommend it. Most movies you go to now are going to be $15 to $20.
Yeah, Ariel had a discussion. She's like, yeah, you got that. I mean, popcorn. I'm like, yeah, but you didn't get popcorn. You just got the game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think $9.99 would have been, I would have felt more comfortable saying, oh, everybody buy it. But it's such a special, sweet thing, and it does such a great job of explaining its story in not hitting you over the head kind of ways. It lets you connect the pieces. And there's some things that it really spells out, and you're like, well, I got that already. But I think it does a beautiful job of giving you this little bit and giving that little bit and making you go, oh, I see how that went to that. And you really understand what the mother has been doing, what the father has been doing, what the daughter has been doing. You really get a whole sense of what the family has been doing by the end.
And it's really all sweet. By assembling pieces, not by having them come in.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff. I am the mom. Recently, I have been.
Right.
So by playing in one sitting, like I have a friend who played it and loved it. But he said that because he played it in one sitting, he found himself towards the end not investigating everything or not looking at everything that he could because he could feel the end coming. Whereas at the beginning, he was like, I'll turn over this leaf or this piece of paper. I don't know what you can actually interact with, but like everything. He was like,
you can interact with a lot of stuff
in a room for 20 minutes or whatever. And towards the end, it was like, I know what's going. And he's like, did I miss stuff? I don't know, but he doesn't want to replay it. But I think that's what's interesting about this type of game where at the end of 2.5 hours, are you just playing it to beat it then? Or did it keep that wonder for you?
I still felt like I was exploring all stuff. Although I did talk to a friend and he mentioned one specific moment that I didn't see, which is because I missed it somehow, which I was bummed about. But I thought I was being really diligent about finding. The other thing I think is very impressive about this game is how it manages to make you flow from one story point to the other, all the while feeling like I was the one deciding where to go next, and yet I've discovered the story in order. And that's a magic trick that's not easy to pull off. And yet, I had freedom to go wherever I wanted in the house, and yet I discovered the story in a very linear way. And I thought that was really cool, because I never felt like I was being pushed in one direction, and yet I found out the information chronologically, which was pretty cool. I mean, it's not going to reinvent the wheel. It's not the greatest game I've played all year, but I find it to be a really special experience.
It is the highest rated game on Shaq News, but we also only started reviews a few weeks ago.
Did you play it?
No, I haven't had a chance to yet.
I highly recommend it. I think it shows that the medium is maturing. You know, it's one of those things that we used to talk about on TRS all the time, is like, when are we going to get our Diving Bell and the Butterfly? When is video games going to be able to give you an experience like Diving Bell and the Butterfly? Now, this isn't that, but it's a
real
simple...
Is it at least a Citizen Kane of video games?
I wouldn't mean at least. No, that would be at most.
It's this resonance with the player that makes it significant. So it's interesting, because the game creates its own space by being this clean experience, as you described it. It's like, hey, I don't need to give you a bloody bathtub, and I don't need to give you a talking head character exposition. Right. I can actually be something a little more sophisticated, while at the same time being just simple in my sophistication, and connect with you, my audience, in a way that resonates with you without me beating you over the head with it.
And just because it's a video game, I don't have to have you killing anything.
Yeah.
I don't have to feed you action moments every... I was gripped by the interactivity of the experience of wandering around and finding things and discovering stuff. But I also don't have to give you this crazy science fiction story. I don't have to...
You don't have to do Myst.
Right.
You don't have to do Myst. Because I do think it
harkens... Well, I like that stuff. It's all we get in video games, is this crazy over-the-top genre stuff.
Well, I meant, but even in adventure games. I mean, adventure games were, you know... top of the mound, you know, 20 years ago, but they were all like, okay, here you are in this room, here's this crazy contraption, now figure out how this brain teaser works, figure out which piece that you have to go find in some other room plugs into something else, and then now suddenly opens the door.
And other than like Police Quest, you know, everything of that adventure era was still in the fantastical. Mm-hmm. And I just like the fact that this game is comfortable telling a very pedestrian story and telling it well, and I was entertained and gripped by it.
I think we're seeing that. I think that is going to come... Well, indies are going to become more and more, I think, a staple of gaming, with both Microsoft now making a serious play with Xbox One and PS4 still with their commitment. And I think you're going to see this come into some of the more mainstream games, which I've sung The Last of Us praises before, which I know is, you know, there's violence and whatever and all that stuff in it, but in terms of like a gripping, mature story that's like the genre moving. Because I went back to Halo 4, which I haven't finished, which is a beautiful game, and the gameplay is still there, the sandbox element. But just like for me now, I want more Brothers. I want more Journey. Gone Home sounds fascinating. Or Bioshock Infinite, for the idiots don't think that game's good. But for me, it's like Halo to me, I almost would rather have just had Horde modes. I don't like the story. There's this thing. I know people love that fiction, but the way that it presented it just feels now to me weird or archaic. Like the combat's amazing, but then it's like, I think you said on this show, you just go around and push buttons and then there's like plot line happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see these two worlds continue to come together though. I think there still will be Halos and Call of Duties or whatever, but
I think you're bang on. And it was interesting at Gamescom to see Sony put so much of their stage show presence into indie games. And I questioned on Twitter, and this was a genuine question. It was not meant to troll. But like, it's interesting to see them put out a big part of their pitch, because, you know, a big press conference is your pitch of, hey, PlayStation 4 is going to be awesome because of indie games.
Both companies are doing that.
And both of, you know, Microsoft has now followed in their footsteps. I see it as following in the footsteps, because Sony blazed this trail right off the bat. And
I agree with that.
There's a reason why there's all these games that Sony can have on stage during Gamescom, and Microsoft can only announce, well, we're starting our program now.
But it was clear from that presentation. I mean, definitely the power The power of the Sony PlayStation brand in Europe clearly helped them, because it looks like they walked through Europe and basically cleaned house on all the great indie studios there.
Isn't it interesting how that's the battleground? It's like both companies want to claim stake on independent games. It's so interesting to me. And I was having this conversation with somebody recently, I think it was Dan again, who said video games are where movies were in the 70s. Hmm. It's like, what's exciting, what's the real creative juice is coming from this independent counterculture kind of response to all these big games. And it's so fascinating that both of these big console manufacturers are recognizing that and absolutely directly pursuing it and advertising the fact, like, hey, come play in our
playground. Well, I think it's because, you know what? With the exception of games like Titanfall, every game is going to be on every platform.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's...
And even Titanfall might end up on a PlayStation console later down in the cycle.
What I did here. Did you see what I did?
I
literally took
all right,
list.
So we have
that
a list.
That is a bad battle to fight, because unless you're Microsoft and you have $1 billion to spend buying up games like Dead Rising 3... You know,
they're aiming for 30 frames per second, by the way.
This is where they can really find their unique voice.
Before we leave the indie games thing,
we're not going to leave it. We're going to come back and talk about it in a second.
Well, this is a super small point. The only problem I have with it is the PlayStation 4, like, it's going to be amazing. Play all these indie games, and they're also available on the Vita. Which I love, but
that's not a problem. No, great.
That's exactly what they should be doing.
Why do I need a PS4? Is what I'm saying. They should all be available on the PS3.
Actually, most of them are on PS3 as well.
I love it. So. It's a hard sell to say buy $400 to play this
Vita
thing.
Is exactly... They're so smart. So smart about positioning Vita as your independent games platform. It's what they should have been doing all along. I love that they woke up to that, because it's brilliant.
There's a lot of things they could do. All right. We will come back on the other side. We will talk some about Gamescom, PlayStation 4, and I want to get into, of course, the big indie game that I think caught a lot of people's attention. External Productions over there at Sony Santa Monica has Everybody's Gone to Rapture from the Dear Esther folks, and it looked crazy very cool. So
what about Rhyme?
It looked very good too, but as far as just like grabbing your attention and being provocative and in that realm of what we were just talking about from a story base, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the Vita also.
Stick around, folks. We'll be right back for the second half of the show. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games. Pre-order upcoming titles and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Hey, if you're tired of listening to those Gamefly ads and you happen to be, you know, running a business, you too could sponsor Weekend Confirmed. All you have to do is reach out to at Del Rio Music on Twitter, and we would be happy to welcome in.
I would even say grateful.
Grateful.
Would you read it, Jeff?
I'll read the shit out of it.
I'd be glad to read that promo for you.
He's reading it, but there's no shit.
Jeff, did you know what I learned at Gamescom?
What did you learn,
Any game you're playing on your PlayStation 4, you can start playing on your Vita.
Almost any game.
And go into another room and keep playing it.
I heard almost any game is what I heard when I was listening.
Let me wipe the egg off of our faces again, since we blew that a couple of 3 weekends ago. It was a big feature, and then it just sort of slipped our minds. But I think they did a great job of demoing that.
I love it. It certainly steals the thunder from the Wii U. Although, you know, obviously higher price point on both points.
Sure. But still great. What a great demo.
They
with Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I mean, that was...
One of the things I tweeted during that press conference was they did exactly what I've been wishing for them to do, which is show me why I should be excited that I have a Vita.
Killzone Mercenaries.
No, I mean, they positioned the Vita in exactly the right
way. Christian's been playing Mercenaries beta, by the way, is the way he said that.
Well, we'll get to that. I'm just saying that the extension of it as an extension of my PS4 is awesome. The things that I can do with it and also my PS4. The idea of it as a great indie games platform, and the killer app that is Rogue Legacy. done and done.
Also, I think cross-buy, that's a huge thing for me, because I don't want to buy the same game on my Vita if I already have it on my PS3 or if I already have it on my PS4.
Well, provided they follow... I mean, that's back to the Dragon's Crown thing, though. I mean, that's not every game is
going to
cross-buy.
Support that, but...
It's great when they do. I was just banging out a couple levels of Hotline when I was sitting here and go back home.
Yeah, Dragon's Crown was an Atlas game, you know? But for the most part,
And they need all the money
For the most part, the cross-play games are first party. And
right, because they're the ones who can afford to do it.
And a lot of the games that were announced... across all these platforms are first party games.
So. Jeff, I want to ask you about Rogue Legacy, because in addition to Rogue Legacy, another announcement that people were excited about for Vita was Borderlands 2.
Yeah, we got a big cheers in the audience, didn't it?
Well, you're raising your eyebrows at that, but not at Rogue Legacy. My question is, on those games like this, where you've played the game and by the time it comes out on Vita, it's going to have been, you know, quite a few seasons. How exciting is that really to you? The prospect of it is cool. I mean, I hear Borderlands 2 on Vita, I'm like, badass. And then I think, you know, I played the shit out of Borderlands 2. I'm not...
The difference with Rogue Legacy is that it will be its console debut.
But do I need... Well,
a lot of people don't have PCs to play games.
Some people have not played it, right? Right. But Jeff was excited about it. Would you go back and play it again on Vita?
I think I brought a laptop with a Xbox 360 controller onto the plane with me to play.
By the time it comes out, are you going to be excited? By the time Fez comes out on the PlayStation platform, is that really going to be that big of a thing?
I think it's more about...
People don't have Xboxes that have PlayStations. So I think that's a big deal for that platform.
It's more about expanding the audience for these great games and allowing more people to play it. And the idea of having Rogue Legacy to go is the perfect way to digest that game. It is spectacular as a to-go product. I think sitting down in front of my PC to play Rogue Legacy is, for me, for some reason, not as exciting as taking it on the go, because you can just keep rinse repeating going into those dungeons and getting gold and grinding for gold. I can do that on my Vita. It's awesome. I will be getting that game for Vita and I'll probably play through it again. But I mean, I understand your point in the sense that people are excited about known quantities because they know it to the point where they don't need to play it anymore. They've already got it.
Right. So and so that's one player is the person who's already played it and had that fun with it. And the other player, you know, even if they had been looking forward to it, is that we've been dealing with this, you know, we have very short-term memories in the gaming community. Like a couple of 3 weeks after a game's out, we're already forgetting about it. So
I mean, it's like forgetting the fact that Vita can play PS4 games through remote play just like weeks after they announced it.
We're
idiots.
But you know what I'm saying?
What about Minecraft being announced on both next gen consoles? It's like, well, okay, are there any more people that need Minecraft? Is it just sort of that, like, okay, well, you can put your old console away and keep
this
new one out?
Minecraft is a phenomenon. I mean, Minecraft is a phenomenon. So yeah. That's a little different than these titles that are big in their own right, but not a phenomenon like Minecraft.
Well, I think in those cases, it
expands
the audience
for them.
When it comes
down to it, Fez comes out, are you going to choose to play Fez, or are you going to choose to play New Hotness 1, 2, or 3?
But once again, you know, we are a rather odd group in that we typically own every console and play all these games.
And I was asking that really as a person, so if you're a person who didn't have access to Fez before, and Fez comes out, you know, whenever it comes out next year sometime, or Rogue Legacy, or any of these titles, are you going to say, you know what, I really wanted to play those a year and a half ago, I think I'm going to play them now,
or are you going to
play New Hotness, because there's a significant part of the gaming community that's going to be saying, all right, well, you already played that, yeah, great, welcome to the party. How long does the party thing carry?
I mean, this is a big thing that's discussed in the board game community, and they refer to it as the cult of the new. And
we have it bad in video games.
We have it, I would say, even worse, because things tend to get churned even quicker. And we are certainly complicit in that on this show.
But I think if you think about regular gamers, I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto 5 DLC coming out really late on PlayStation. That still had that still worked, you know.
GTA 4.
BioShock 1, that came out maybe, what, a year and a half, 2 years after the Xbox 360 release, and PlayStation gamers still bought that in the, you know, hundreds of thousands. So,
and I think there's a new, when it's introducing a new way to play, like, I don't know if Fez on PS4 or on a console, that will have a huge demand. I think it will, like you're saying, Andrew, people don't have access to that. But for me, what's exciting is the Vita play, a game that fits on Vita. I think I've played through Fez and I really liked it. I'll probably buy it again on Vita, probably when it goes on sale. But like, I picked up, you know, I have Hotline Miami on my PC and I bought it just recently for my Vita because I like it a lot and I can play it anywhere now and just and sit down
if,
and play
and
it.
And even if it's the same game, I think there is an appeal to being able to replay that game on the go because... Okay. Because certain games are designed for that bite-sized experience. So it's like, yeah, this is the same game that I played maybe a year or two ago.
Which
but
is...
because I'm consuming it in these like 15-minute chunks, it doesn't necessarily feel like you're retreading old ground. You're just
and I think you see
it's just a way to kill time.
Different know? If you looked at 2 years ago Nintendo's E3 press conference. Because they hit and it's like, here we go, all these great games, Mass Effect 3, Batman Arkham City. And that was a case of you're getting the same game.
In the same platform.
In the same
place. Like,
same,
you're playing on your television screen.
Right.
From your couch.
And someone that actually, only would appeal to people that only had a Wii and didn't have either next-gen system.
And the thing is...
It's still a niche. A Vita game is definitely a freaking niche. But it fills something that otherwise doesn't exist.
Yeah, for me, I mean, the main appeal of the Wii's launch library for me was the fact that I could play Mass Effect 3 while I was in bed. That was actually... I didn't care about any of the gamepad functionality except for the fact that I could carry it in a portable device.
People
you know?
Don't know this about Vita Andrew Yoon, but he's like those the grandparents in Willy Wonka. Like, he just lives in his bed as much as possible.
That's not a joke. That is so true. It's amazing. My bed isn't just covered in just like
you
disgusting
get like a ceiling belt. Mount for your television screen or something. Like, yeah. Bed.
Hey, baby.
I know. I do have a wall mount. Just so that's I can cool. just lie down in bed and watch TV and play games. Yeah, that.
Well, I think you guys made
most
a good
of
argument.
My blogging on Shaq comes from my bed.
So. Just keep so that in I mind just, next time
yeah,
you're reading
just,
it.
Just think about that. I'm probably naked either from the waist down or up while I'm writing.
But not
writing
never both.
Never both.
Because he's not.
I'm
disgusting.
A professional. All right. Yeah. I'm a professional.
But that's the argument.
I think you guys made a good counter. I think you guys make a good point. And then I honestly don't have an opinion one way or the other. I just haven't thought about it. But I mean, Borderlands 2 is the one that really struck me of like, wow, I love Borderlands 2. And I played so much of it. But then I'm like, wow, would I want to go back to it just because I could carry it around on my Vita with me? Or if I was going to play on Vita, would I just go ahead and play something else? I guess it also depends a lot about what's out then, what I'm playing. But yeah, it's an interesting discussion.
I think those grindy games, those level up, get your progress, keep playing a little bit, are great on the go because you can you're on the bus, standing in line.
Specifically with Borderlands, I think it'll depend on whether or not DLC is continuing by the time the Vita version comes out. The fact that they announced a lot of content for Borderlands 2, even after the season pass is over, might suggest that. They might be taking this thing a lot longer than anyone had anticipated, especially given that I'm assuming that a Borderlands 3 for next gen will take a pretty long time to develop. So there might be a compelling argument there if they release Borderlands 2. It has, you know, cross-play with PS3, so you can transfer your save file over. And
you know, the
bam,
bummer is if I played it on an Xbox 360, I can't take any of my characters across, which is
well, you know, the Sony argument is, why are you doing that? Why are you so silly?
Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
Why are you hitting yourself, boy? So I think one of the things I'm most excited about out of that press conference was the little tease for Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. And if you haven't seen this trailer yet, you should definitely
well, it doesn't
watch
show
it.
Much.
No,
you
because
said it's a tease.
But it's so cool. You know,
it makes you pay attention. I think more than any other trailer that they showed at the
it has gravitas
at the PlayStation conference. I was blogging the event and just that, I'm just like, I couldn't stop watching it. Like, I couldn't start typing. I just had to keep on
the
watching.
The style, that computer screen with the closed loop.
Yeah, what is
closed.
That about?
Like, yeah, what is, like, what's going on here?
It's definitely a prequel to Bioshock, right? Everybody's Gone to Rapture.
The story, actually, because they did actually talk about this on the PlayStation blog a little bit, is that you play as a scientist who has been abandoned and is stuck in the exact moment of the rapture. Like, exact, you're like stuck in this exact moment and you have to explore.
Quick, Sally, end your sentence. Oh,
and
shit.
You step on your glasses in the library. No!
That's an old reference.
And you have to explore this world, which is ostensibly empty. Although one of the weird things is, like, people you may find, so there might be other people who are trapped in the moment of the end of the world and sort of discover what's happened in first person perspective. And that's all I really explained. It
sounds like a rather big game for a small game.
Which is why they announced that it's PS4 exclusive, because they realized they couldn't make the game by themselves.
Possibly.
So they explained, all right, well, you know, they originally announced for PC And they had this really ambitious idea, but ultimately they knew they couldn't make the game that they wanted to make by themselves. So it's like, well, we could take it to Kickstarter, but maybe, you know, it won't work. So
Sony is the biggest Kickstarter of them all.
So yeah, they found a partner in Sony Santa Monica, and now Sony Santa Monica is co-developing it, very much akin to, say, like Journey and that game company, or
right.
or The Unfinished Swan. And so,
did they ever finish that?
They did finish it.
Okay.
It was okay. And
the finished Unfinished Swan.
And so, because it's the, you know, I guess technically a Sony first party game, it's currently only for PS4. That, granted, that doesn't mean that it can't end up on PC down the line, because previous Santa Monica collaborations like the Pixel Junk series and
they're everywhere,
and Everyday Shooter, they all ended up on PC. So it, you know, for people that were upset to find out that,
just depends on how the deal was structured, yeah, how they put it all together, right?
For people that were upset to find out that PC had been abandoned for this game, there is still some hope.
It just, it really tweaked me, the whole, you know,
yeah, it looked interesting.
The speaker voice, getting out of London, the computer loop, the whole thing.
And the fact that was the first new game that they were showing off at the press conference, that was like really, first new game for PS4.
I just have a little bit of apocalypse fatigue.
Yeah.
I really do.
So you add that to zombie fatigue. So you have zombie fatigue.
Well,
zombies typically cause apocalypses.
Yeah.
There's very rarely a zombie game where it's like, well, everything's just dandy here.
It could be like I Am Legend, and you're just moving on to a new type of
Shaun of the Dead
inhabitant of the world. So starting things off, they made a big push on Vita, announcing the price drop for one thing, which we've been looking to for a long time.
That is a significant price drop too, because in my brain, Vita is $249. But then the fact that it's $199 across the board, including the 3G models, including the Walking Dead bundle, which just came out this week, that's a $100 price drop. So that's like...
Yeah, you should grab those.
There's some old bundles around, too, that have all seen that drop, that you can get some good pack-in games.
I mean, I would say that the Walking Dead bundle's the one to get, because that actually... What I thought they would do is they would phase out the 3G system and all of them would be Wi-Fi.
I thought that too, I agree.
But apparently they did the opposite, where they phased out all the Wi-Fi systems and all of the systems are 3G. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
So, okay, because
that's just them trying to phase out the 3Gs.
You did not put a SIM in it, and it's, who cares, right? Don't put a SIM in it.
Yeah, just you have that option. I mean, personally, I enjoy my 3G Vita. It's actually saved me a few times, because my phone has terrible battery life right now, so it's dead, and I'm like, oh man, I need to make a phone call, and
I ain't getting out of this bed.
And I'm not. Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, plug in my charger? I don't think so.
So I jump on the Vita. I use Skype or Google Voice. That's how my life works now.
So they also slashed the price on their extremely expensive memory cards, and so now they're only way overpriced.
Instead of way overpriced?
Because they're still way overpriced. I mean, they were extremely expensive before, and now they're way overpriced. Like, that to me is still something of an impediment to the system, that the memory prices for this thing...
Well, it's good that they dropped
silly.
Them a little.
It's silly, but for me, I think I have a 16 gig card, and even then, I'm constantly deleting stuff off of it. And
I have a 16, and I have to like take things off.
I want to buy the 32 gig one, but I just can't justify buying that given the price.
$80 an hour.
It was over 100, and now it's like $80. It's insane. It is absolutely insane that expensive. But good on them to lower the price, and recommendation, you know, friendly. How about you get the price and the memory down? Because the thing is, people are buying tons. You want them to be buying tons and tons of digital stuff, so make it easy for them to buy digital
stuff.
Exactly,
and PlayStation Plus. If you have PlayStation Plus and you only have a 4 gigabyte card, that's useless.
You're pretty effed.
You can download one game with that card and you're done.
So that having said, I was very excited to see Murasaki Baby.
Boy, that looks
cool,
doesn't
so
it?
Cool. Former Grasshopper developer at the helm there. And actually, it was funny. It brought to mind one of my favorite sushi places in San Francisco called Murasaki, which is Purple. So Purple Baby.
Purple.
And it's very cool. Evidently, you're
mouth
guiding.
Mouth on her head somehow. Weird.
Well, I guess that's all touch control. And so you're guiding this this girl through her nightmares and dreams by dragging her along with your finger. I like that. I like this idea of embracing the touch controls. And we got two sticks, but let's go ahead and do something. You know, let's use the touch panels here.
Yeah, it looked really evocative. Very cool.
Anybody else excited about Miyazaki, maybe? Or just like kind of.
I mean, I think the problem with the PlayStation conference at Gamescom was that they announced too many games.
Well, he even said at one point, there are literally too many games coming out on our system for me to have time to talk about them all on stage.
And
I was like, that's kind of rad.
And I don't think we've even been able to write about all of them. It's just, and to be honest, I can't even comprehend. Like, wait, is that also coming out on Vita?
What's that crazy Defender game?
Oh, that's awesome.
It looks like what Pac-Man.
I love Housemarque. So that's from Housemarque. It's called Rezogun.
You know how, Pac-Man update, what was it called?
Championship edition.
Like,
which, by the way,
which
is getting another update.
I saw that
Championship
too.
Edition DX Plus.
Because it's like the 100th anniversary of Pac-Man. I am old. It looks like that for Defender, the old Defender game,
share that. I mean, so Housemarque legendarily did Super Stardust,
right?
Which was
great, still great.
Which is a, you know, PS3 remake of an Amiga game.
And looked fantastic and was one of the early big hits on the
great
platform.
In three dizzles, by the way.
I've heard that before.
Oh, really? It's a showpiece for three dizzles. If you've got a TV that can do 3D, put on that. Because when you drop in those things from above you and it like comes from behind your face, it's pretty cool.
And so Housemarque is awesome. They've done great, great work before. And this case, they got rid of the, you know, encompassing the globe thing and went to side scroller. But it, like you said, Defender, there's even a mechanic where you're like, evidently like
picking up little dudes
and stuff. So I'm pretty excited for that. Every Gone with the Rapture, we did that. Miyazaki, baby. Rhyme
looks awesome. Rhyme looks like Ico meets
Wind Waker. That's
where
immediately everyone says it's Ico meet Wind Waker. And it's from Tequila Works, who did Deadlight, which was, I mean, you could sort of sense that there was some inspiration there, although it may have missed the target to a degree. I like a studio that pushes themselves creatively, and then, you know, hey, if you have the chops to tap into Ico as a touchstone,
yeah. And
for
if we're
it.
Not going to get an actual sequel from there, or an actual,
I mean, Last Guardian.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, if you haven't heard, Last Guardian is still in development, but now it's taking a back seat to development of other titles.
It's going to be, I heard it's going to be a launch title for PS6.
No, it's not called The Launch Guardian. It's The Last Guardian, PS10. It'll come up at the very end.
Guarding the last PlayStation will be The Last Guardian.
Yeah.
Before they move
I heard
on.
They're going to come out with a combo pack with Half-Life 3.
Will it also come with a GTA 5 headset exclusive to PlayStation 3?
And the game that John Davison cued me in on how big a deal this was for Europe was the Shadow of the Beast announcement.
I thought that when they started talking about that, I'm like, oh my god, is somebody remaking Altered Beast?
No, but Shadow of the Beast, an old Amiga game. And
I want somebody to make Altered Beast.
No, you don't.
Have you played Altered Beast?
And they did a remake.
When I was 10, I did.
They did a reimagining of it or something. It wasn't good.
It was the packing with my Genesis.
All right, I guess I'll stop my petitioning for that. You guys convinced me.
That was a very half-assed petition.
I didn't love it that much.
If only the internet worked that way.
Power-packed announcements leading up to, ladies and gentlemen, your PlayStation 4 will be arriving November 15th.
I think Microsoft might beat them.
I already got my email from Amazon that says,
me too.
That says you're
no longer arriving December 31st.
We have good news for you. Yeah. Great. Thank you so much, Amazon. You'll send it to me.
So let me ask you this, Garnett. What are you going to be doing with your shiny new PlayStation 4 on November 15th?
What will I be doing on November 15th? Well, first of all, I want to ask Christian about his question or his comment. You think that Microsoft may look to try and scoop them?
I think so. They scaled back on their launch countries from, was it 13 now? I don't know the number, but it was more. Now it's even smaller of tier one launches. And this is the time for them to get an FU to Sony, because Microsoft had gone first on so many things. Mm-hmm. And now this time Sony planted their flag. I think if Microsoft exclusively on DLC.
Exclusively and not at all.
Not anywhere. If they can come out on the 5th or something in North America, even if it's just North or wherever, you know, that's huge for Microsoft.
Does it make a difference really if they come out before them, if it's that close? Because at this point we're talking about...
Yeah, it would have
depends
to be
on inventory. Yeah,
yeah, it's totally... Like, if it's only satisfying pre-orders for both of them, does it really matter?
I mean,
it might matter to third-party software sales.
I think it does in
perception?
Press coverage. I don't, like, let's say either one of these gets, you know, Good Morning America coverage or whatever. If they do a big piece on the Xbox One coming out, will they do that a week later? And also, and even if they do it, and now this again. And it's that yeah, mind share.
Yeah. True. Think
about the non-educated consumer that's like, oh, they don't know that there's multiple video game platforms. It's like, oh, you know, that's the new Wii.
Oh, it's a new. There's a new video game machine.
Yeah. And it's not the biggest thing ever, but if
those
Microsoft...
people are stupid. Right, everybody? How stupid are people?
So let me throw you another question.
So stupid.
Let me throw you another question then, Christian.
They pay $2 just to play in an arena. What idiots.
Sentient Microbe put this up in the listener questions, and it's a good one. It's one I think a lot of folks out there will be asking. Is there any argument to be made for waiting past launch before purchasing a next-gen console?
There's a huge argument.
There's every argument.
Yeah. That's the smart person thing
yeah,
to do.
Yeah,
I can't even finish the question, folks. I guess you got your answer.
I mean,
I'm not doing it, but no, everyone else should.
Idiot alert.
I've recommended all my friends, hey, like, you don't really need to jump into this new generation.
But do you have a pre-order I can take, bro? Do you got one?
I have this sickness that says I have to have it on the first day.
If you're the kind of reasonable person that's contemplating, like, do I really need one on day? You don't need one on day one.
That's actually a good point.
If
you're even asking the question, the answer is probably you'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
And especially because, remember, the new generation of consoles don't have backwards compatibility. So when Dark Souls 2 comes out, you won't be able to play it on your new system. So just that's like
which does pose a whole other problem of what the hell am I going to do to hold all this shit that's got to be around my television?
You're going to need one of those HDMI switchers. You're going to have to build like an extra cabinet.
We're going to get CRT TVs again so we can have big fucking cabinets and none of this wall mount. Like finally a TV big enough to hold all my consoles and memory bars and sensor bars
on
top.
I think this goes to my question about what are you going to do when you... I'm excited about November 15th. I'm excited about it. And then I looked at the launch lineup.
May I answer the rest of Super Microbe's question just real quickly? Because it's a nice listener. Like, look, we got to reward our listeners for asking questions.
Reward them.
Are there likely to be manufacturing upgrades within a few months of launch? I would say probably not on either of these boxes because PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 have been really...
PlayStation
really,
4 Slim is going to be hilarious in 2 years when it... It's a slightly smaller box.
and I think both
it's actually just a Vita at that point.
Both these manufacturers probably learned a lot from their original launches. PlayStation 3, though, especially because they were trying so hard to keep PlayStation 2 backward compatibility, that really threw off their first few models. Most games will be split current to next gen anyway, right, Jeff?
What?
Most games are going to be split.
That's your
current to next gen.
Yes.
Right, Jeff?
I mean, every game on this goddamn list.
Yeah.
No.
So what am I going to be playing? So that's actually a really good question because actually I turned to Andrew this morning and said, you know, I know it's marketing speak. And he said, yeah, it is just marketing speak. But NVIDIA is doing a promotion with Ubisoft where they're like, all of our next gen games are going to be even better played on NVIDIA PCs. And I was like, Watch Dogs.
And you already have one of those.
I do have one of those.
Here's the thing.
And I got the other two coming.
The 360 was the first console for me where when I brought it home, I bought Perfect Dark Zero and Call of Duty 2.
Good.
I believe those were my two launch games that I picked up. And what did I end up playing for the weeks and weeks? Geometry Wars. And that was the first time in the history of my console life where what was most exciting about the console wasn't the disc or cartridge that I stuck into it. It was the stuff that I could do when I turned it on and started getting online and browsing around. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the case here as well.
With which one?
Both.
Or both. Both.
I think both. Okay. I think these are now.
Did you like the way
electronics
Shuhei,
devices?
Did you like the way Shuhei started the conference? Yoshida-san, like where he's like sitting there playing and like
yeah,
like,
I didn't,
was a little
I didn't care for the camera work of me not being able to see what the hell was going on with that.
Was bad on that feed.
And has the internet to do that? Was that real? Was that live? Because the Xbox reveal event wasn't real and live when they showed their dash.
Well, they certainly had pauses in there that they probably would have edited out had it.
Yeah,
been
I
fake.
Don't. I looked that.
I think
looked
it's
pretty
real.
Realistic, and I liked that interface. I thought there was a lot to like about the way he was moving around.
I didn't really get
things.
A good sense of it because I really could tell how many freaking glowy machines were in the fucking audience.
And the thing is, like,
a lot of laptops.
You know
there.
What? If they're gonna have the audience, like, at least show their faces, like, have reaction shots. You couldn't even tell if the audience was interested.
They paid
in
a lot
you
can
tell
for
what
that
phones
crane.
They own, though.
That crane rental was not cheap.
I know that's what I said. But okay, so
what am I gonna play?
I think it's gonna be more about
unboxing your box, plugging it in, and fiddling around with shit instead of like, oh, I'm throwing in Killzone.
I'm throwing in Infamous. After that second Son.
It's not a launch title.
That's February, right?
Well, I'm throwing it in anyway.
Infamous would be my, yes, I would be picking that if it was Killzone, everything else on here.
Killzone looks great. Killzone gets a lot of shit, and Killzone 1 is fucking horrible. Killzone 2 and 3 are really good first-person shooter
Killzone
game.
2 is amazing. Killzone 3 is awesome.
I would give you 2.
And this I like 2 a lot. Everything they've shown of this one looks pretty great.
I think it's looking pretty good.
Honestly,
I want my Infamous now.
Honestly,
my heart's broken.
Honestly, the first thing that I'm going to do when
look at the list! That's what I'm saying!
And Forza 5 looks pretty fantastic. Those would be my two games.
Forza 5
are you
is
download
no
Drive
trip.
Club?
The first thing, I'm going to do probably is download Netflix and watch it.
No, the first
you can't do that in your house.
The first thing
be in bed.
You're gonna do is not be able to connect and be like, mother, the internet's gonna.
I mean, I think
the first thing you do with the Xbox One is it's gonna be like day one update necessary.
Do we have a?
And it's gonna sit there and hang while everyone tries to hit the same server at the same time.
Do we have a launch date for Watch Dogs?
Watch Dogs is November 19th.
Oh,
or 18th, I think. Sorry.
Oh, really? So yeah. Okay, so that's the one game
window
on here that's not.
Day and
that's
date.
Not going to be out before it on other things.
So the conspiracy theory. So
that's not an exclusive.
So one of the things that the internet thinks that the Xbox will launch after PS4 is because of the Watch Dogs date, because Watch Dogs is a confirmed day one release on
of all this stuff, Assassin's Creed 4, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty, Need for Speed Rivals, Madden, NBA, Lego Super Heroes. All the ones that are common to both systems, all will be out on other things before that.
Yeah,
console.
Which is why they have those $10
upgrade
next
things.
Gen upgrades. Yeah.
So I'm saying if you're all jazzed about playing Battlefield 4, which I am, am I going to wait however many more weeks?
You're
no,
gonna,
I'm going to get it for my PC.
You get it, or you get it for your PS3 and Xbox 360, and then you pay.
Well,
the
I'm not going to slum
and
it.
And then you pay the $10 upgrade fee.
I think console gamers would wait. I think if you have a nice gaming rig, you don't wait.
Yeah, I mean that.
Well,
that
yeah, then you're already on the next gen.
So
but,
what is it? I hate to be cynical about this. You got Killzone, Knack, Drive Club, and whatever downloadable stuff.
Yeah,
now,
case,
for me, the exciting thing is PlanetSide 2 and DCUO.
Okay.
That.
It could be huge.
Those
Planet
could
Side,
be
Planet
real
Side could
fun.
Be huge.
Especially
sure.
DCUO for me, because the return of Raptor Man. Raptor Man returns after being abandoned for years.
Oh my God, I forgot about Raptor Man.
And the fact that they're going to be free to play, and even if you don't have PlayStation Plus, you can still jump into them online.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be a pretty big thing for Sony if they can properly promote that.
So now that I've answered your question for you, you answer your question, Garnet. What are you going to be doing on November 15th?
Well, I guess I'm going to be crying.
You're
going to
be waiting for Infamous.
I'll be sitting there looking at myself. Like, where's my Infamous?
I'm glad we broke this to you because you would have had a really sad day.
Infamous
is coming out in February. It's not that long of a wait after November.
But Andrew, I want my Infamous now.
So did Sony, but from what I heard, it was not near ready to be ready now.
I would say then of the rest that's out there, I'm a driving fan, and Forza super impressed me.
But that's so not on November 15th, dude. I'm asking you about November 15th.
Are you talking about just for PlayStation 4?
Yes, we only know. That's the only date
so
we know.
Just for PlayStation 4, obviously, I mean, definitely we'll jump into Killzone, without a doubt. I think that Knack is a kind of game that I will appreciate and enjoy. It like I said originally, it reminds me in ways
fun.
Of Malice, and I hope that, and Malice was a, you know, creative spark that was a, you know, failed final production launch, and with Cerny behind this thing, I mean, God, when Cerny gets up there and talks, I just want to sit there and listen and go, yes, yes, yes.
I think that
you know, him behind that game and what they can do with it, theoretically, if it can be translated into fun action platforming game, then it could be a real launch day awesome game for PlayStation.
I hope that's the case. I just get the sense that whatever downloadable stuff is available for PS4 when I plug it in is going to far outshine whatever disc-based thing I can put in. I really do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think that's where the excitement's going to be. I don't think it's going to be like, oh my God, I got this new machine. I want to play Knack.
I mean, yeah.
Knack might be fun, but
PS3 launch, it was all about Super Stardust HD. It wasn't about
Genji. It was about Resistance 1. That was huge.
That was an awful game. So.
It was hugely popular.
It was hugely popular because there was like no other retail game out there.
I wouldn't say Resistance 1 was awful. I liked Resistance 1, actually. And I thought Resistance was setting the table for a much better run than that series had.
Sony would argue, that's great, Jeff. That's what we want you to do. And by the way, you can download Knack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can download.
So get into that store. Give us your money.
Day one download.
I mean, I think if I can, you know, if War Thunder is there on day one, if some of these games like Rezogun and
well, Rezogun is going to be a later. Isn't that a PlayStation Plus as well?
Yes.
Oh yeah, you'll get it for free.
It's the first PlayStation Plus free game.
Yeah. So for me, I think
so you get that and you get Drive Club.
For me, I think day one, November 15th, it's going to be me just downloading what's on PlayStation Plus and. Sorry, not buying any games on PS4.
And that's a huge thing, right? Isn't that huge?
It's like getting, you know, Super Mario Brothers to NES. You know, I'm
fine. Well, but it's not like that. It's not like that at all.
It is. For me, it's like, oh man, it's like I'm getting a free game with my console.
Well, I guess that's kind of true. But
it's no FIFA 14.
You're not going to buy that.
Oh, I can tell you another one I'll definitely get since it's listed here on the launch is Hohokam.
Oh my gosh, that looks
awesome.
I want to play that on my Vita.
I'll be up on that immediately.
The thing I'm trying to say here with all of this is that it's a console launch, but it's a unique one because the games are spectacular. It's a huge, very strong launch. Unfortunately, most of the games will have already been out. So it's very strange in that I think they may find their pack-in rates are going to be really low because why. I'm gonna get the console and get two games that if I'm a huge day one kind of video game guy, I will already have.
But I think that's why they're doing that $10 upgrade.
And I think there's
a
lot of people. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who will be saying, you know what? I'm investing $400 in a machine. I'm gonna wait a month rather than buy a $60 game now and just buy it once.
But once again, I think $10, that's like a pretty easy price to swallow.
That's pretty true. That's true. That's true.
All right, we got time for one more segment. Stick around when we come back. Some XCOM the Bureau. I don't know.
Sweet.
We got plenty. We got a laundry list of stuff to get through. So we're going to sort out what we want to talk about, and we'll give you one more segment. Stick around. We'll be right back. At jazz for your ears there. Love that kind of stuff. All right. So wasting no time, we'll get right on with the rest. I want to talk a little bit about the Bureau because I think if we don't talk about XCOM the Bureau this week, then it will never be talked about, which is a shame because this is a game that almost brings a tear to my eye playing it because it was so long in development. And if you have not read it, there's a very interesting chronicle on Polygon of the 6 years and multiple developers and studios through which this title traveled. And what they have here feels like it would have been an awesome, you know, really polished prototype pitch to make a cool game. It's like they finally got it. They finally found some creative inspiration. They finally got a game. It's like, oh, wow, this could be a great game. Oh, shit. We like spent 10 times more money we ever should have spent on this. Let's
shove it out before the next generation of consoles come out.
Yeah, and it's such a shame because you could just sort of sense it's like, oh, they were finally onto something.
And they even admitted that the game as it is today really came together, you know, maybe like less than a year ago because I think if there was a piece that I wrote on Shaq News about how at one point the studio actually turned it into a top-down game. So
right.
So, you know,
I thought that was really interesting.
You did the first-person mode, and then when you enter a battle focus, it goes into a top-down view, and you can command your soldiers that way. But ultimately, that just ended up turning it into Enemy Unknown. So they're like, wait, we can't do that. And that was last year. That was on the table last year. So really, if you think about it, they made such a drastic change to go from that to this. So really...
Which is why the game, in the form that it takes... feels like someone took the Unreal Engine with a team and knocked out a project. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, it just, it's not at that level that you expect from a game that's, you know, put together by a big, like, 2K Marin, you guys are great. You struggled. You did a ton of work on this. I can't believe you even pulled together what you pulled together the amount of time you did. It's just a shame that it couldn't have been done more. Like, just simple things. Like, the character animations are just, they're painful. It's so painful to watch your character walk and run in this environment. It just doesn't, it just makes you cringe. And how empty the environments in the world and how bad the management of like textures is, where you're next to a character and you're standing there and they have that Unreal Engine problem where it's like they're super blurry.
Granted, you're playing the PS3 version, so
yeah,
it might not be indicative of all the other versions. So.
Well, I mean, on the plus side, they clearly were cognizant of what they were doing because it's not having frame rate problems. So they knew, they did, at least smart developers, they went in and said, hey, we've got to make some trade-offs here. And we know we need to balance for launch. We don't have time to go in and optimize this other stuff. Let's make sure that we run at a good frame rate where the game's playable. So, you know, those things aside,
it certainly looks a lot better on PC. I'll just throw that out there.
The creative spark that they found was the pieces that make XCOM really cool that Firaxis found as well. The recovering alien technology, the researching pieces, and then the tactical combat. And they combined it with Mass Effect 2. And it works really, really well. The combat is super fun, except for the part of the actual down-the-scope trigger piece, which is a little weak. But the main part of it
is... Which is actually, I think, to the game's credit, because it's like, well, you don't really want to play it like a shooter.
Yeah, you don't.
You know, it really encourages you to make sure you're using the radial wheel and make sure you're having your squad mates do most of the work, and then, you know, you occasionally fire a bullet, you know, once in a while.
And, maybe you fire a key bullet, or maybe you get yourself into a key place to throw a grenade at the right time or distract an enemy. But it is that Mass Effect 2 strategic combat, but with the Firaxis tactical elements of, you know, a little more clearly positioning your men with a little more precision and being very clear about showing you where they're in cover, using that shield icon from XCOM, and it just all feels very familiar. So that combined with the era that they tapped into, which is this, you know, 60s sort of cool G-Man vibe to it, it's like they were, if that game had another year, it would be, I know it's silly sounding now, yeah, right? It's like
if
only it had yet another year. But if that game, this game that they found here, had another year, it would have been really something potentially special, because there's a creative spark there that's really good, and there's a game mechanic there that's really good, and those two could have been more powerful than it is. As it is, I couldn't say go play it, because especially if you're $60, it's pretty rough around the edges. But I have no hesitation saying, like, you know, if you enjoyed Mass Effect, and if this sort of 60s fight the aliens XCOM world appeals to you, it's clever.
I can only hope that the continued success of the Firaxis game, and the fact that, you know, Enemy Within is coming out later this year, like, my only hope is that the XCOM brand is strong enough that 2K will be like, all right, yeah, this the Bureau didn't work out for us financially, but at least we have like the groundwork to make like a better, well, more polished sequel.
2K, and then, of all people, should have every understanding of what happened to that game.
Yeah, yeah. So
they shepherded it, and they tried so hard to go along and allow something to incubate there. So now if something finally did incubate, it would seem well-deserved to say, okay, this could be something really great. Now let's start a new project with a new P&L statement, with a new development focus, and let's do it right.
I'm assuming that's why they called it the Bureau and played down the XCOM
So there could be a
name.
Bureau, too.
Well, so not a Bureau 2, but
didn't it ruin the XCOM brand?
But a third-person shooter that has the XCOM name more pronounced in it. So,
but I don't want them to go back to the shooter, because I think what floundered through all those other
okay, I'm not saying like, you know, their original. I'm talking about the gameplay that they established in the Bureau, but just instead of calling it the Bureau 2 for the next game, they'll just have like XCOM really declassified or something like that, you know. It's something that
reclassified, declassified,
redeclassified,
yeah,
redacted,
classified.
Again, redacted, redacted. Because the whole, you've seen the cover for the game. It has like all these redacted pieces on it. Anyway, that's really all there is to say about it. It is a really odd experience to play the game because you really get this sense of potential really bubbling through it. But it is very much just raw potential.
As a mechanics guy, I'm really looking forward to just playing it for like just leisure sake, you know, just play it on my own. So.
In your bed.
In my bed, and it's which really, is where I play all my games.
Which is well done. I mean, it's really, it is, if for me, who thought that Mass Effect strayed too far away from this, coming back to this, you know, being very careful and precise about tactically moving my squad mates around the battlefield, it's like, I'm like, wow, I really wish Mass Effect had stuck more with this and had not gone so action heavy. Mm-hmm. Because this is right in the sweet, it's, you know, it's like, did you ever play Full Spectrum Warrior?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It starts to evoke sort of that feeling, mm-hmm. too. At Full Spectrum War, you didn't have control over any of the down the barrel shooting, right. But it was all about like moving your squad members.
And once
to the
again,
right
like you aiming and shooting is the least important thing you can do in that game. So
it's a different kind of real time strategy because it's not real time strategy. It's very much real time action tactics, and it's
I think
very
there's
fun.
Definitely an audience for that kind of game, even as unpolished as it is. I think you know, if that's the kind of gameplay you're looking for me, you know, I like that idea a lot. So for me, it definitely
it's fun.
To me.
It's cool. Just go in eyes open to, you know,
it'll
what
be a
there.
Great pickup for free on PS Plus.
It would be. Great.
It will be.
It would be a great.
2K has a good reputation of putting out some great.
Or, you know,
games.
Not too far down the line, you know, if you keep up with Cheap Ass Gamer or any of the other sites like that, you know that Target end caps with the red stickers.
Just take it.
But don't forget that the Xbox 360 version has exclusive DLC coming down. So.
Ah, right. Well, there you go. All right, so Christian postulated for his part of the show today that this could be the best generation ever.
The greatest generation, I think you said.
I'm going to call Tom Brokaw up and just be like, hey, I'm going to call Ken Burns. I'm going to have him do a documentary about it. It's going to be at least 9 parts.
It was the greatest generation.
That's right. Only black and white. I know we have video of these video games, but I want black and white photos.
They had Bioshock and The Last of Us.
I agree. I think in games, it being a technology-driven medium, the fact that inherently the technology got so much better this generation... Hmm. It should make it a better generation.
It's not only that.
And I hope that the next generation gets even better.
But see, I don't think it's that at all. I think to me...
Next generation is going to be like anti-establishment.
Yeah, fuck the generation, man.
You're not going to understand how
tune
good
in,
they had
drop
it.
Out.
To me, the best generation before, I feel like the argument you hear, the one I would probably agree with is Super Nintendo. Like that era and that console probably.
Slash Genesis.
If you do the whole era, like that... is people's kind of, that's the best generation.
It has sort of a golden era nostalgia to it.
And I think we've beat it. And I think sometimes when you're living in it, it's hard to recognize how amazing it is. And I think that maybe a game like The Last of Us won't hold up the way Super Mario World does, just because pixel art is kind of forever, whereas polygons age harsher traditionally. But this generation across the PS3 and Xbox 360, the type of content we've had from things like Flower or Journey or Geometry Wars, Last of Us, Gears, and sitting there as it's twilighting, as it's, you know, sitting on the porch in the rocking chair with lemonade, reminiscing, I think it's just nice to step back and look at it. And so I would argue, and I know Andrew agrees with me, I don't know, Jeff, if you're being facetious or if you don't think so, I think this is it. I think we are in the golden age of gaming. This is the
fucking
best generation.
Enjoy that shit.
Seriously.
It's
and
only
I don't
downhill
know,
from here.
Oh, I don't know if next generation will get better. I my hope is it does, but my fear is it'll do the thing Garn and I are talking about in Brothers, where it realizes what it's doing and it fucks up. It's like they want more of this. They want more free to play. We're gonna rape them on Candy Crush.
You know what
Candy Crush, stop it. As I look into the booth.
You know what I think?
Jamie, just put it away.
Put it away.
Put it away.
We're here for you. This isn't a show. We're not recording. We're here for you.
One of the biggest, I think, factors in the quality of this generation is also the length of this generation. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of the fact that it lasted longer than is typical, you got designers really squeezing the best out of the consoles. You got
it's not even just that; it's just quantity. There were literally yes. twice as many games this generation. I think you as there were previous generations.
But even the first half of this generation was pretty amazing. Yeah. Galaxy, Geometry Wars, Mario Galaxy, Geometry Wars, Uncharted, and all those in that first half are great. And the Xbox generation was the shortest. PS2 had a pretty long life, and it just PS2
those,
had
was the same generation.
I know, but the Xbox is. Life was shorter in that generation. It smoked a lot. It got cancer. It died. They killed it quickly. The 360
killed it. But it had Otogi 2, so really it won. Anyway.
So interestingly enough, I feel like I've had this conversation.
Are you going to say every generation? Because that makes generation. You sound old.
It does, I do. Because
this is the first time I'm having.
When we were looking at PlayStation, you know, it was like, wow, here was this console that came along. And revolutionized the world. I mean, went from cartridges with chips in it to optical discs. The first time that you saw the video part, and admittedly it wasn't game, but just the video part of Final Fantasy VII with the train coming around Midgar, you were like.
And that generation.
What about third person action games all of a sudden?
And
like
that
Tomb
generation
Raider.
Had a Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, but that's what makes this generation
GoldenEye
better. Is that it's not that it's Fez, it's
better, but it's different. I mean,
it's
I have to
those
say the same
amazing
thing.
Things.
When we
but
got
it's
to
also
the end of
the...
we got to the end of PlayStation 2, we looked back at a system that had inherit in PlayStation had established its dominance, and in PlayStation 2 cemented that with a PlayStation 2 could be argued as you know the
greatest Big, library.
The greatest library and the greatest ascension of a king to power. You had this, like, the library for PlayStation 2 is unbelievable.
Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City.
It's unbelievable.
I don't think it
had
also
the
range.
It didn't have the competitor. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It did not face as strong a competitor, but it was a very benevolent dictator.
No, I agree, but I think what makes this generation different is the scope that it covers. And maybe I am just swimming in it, so I'm having
and
that.
I'm saying it's interesting, and well, maybe it's not that you're swimming in it, maybe it is that we are improving generation over generation, maybe it is that each generation successively
has been the best. That's what I feel like. I feel like the generation before was the best generation ever.
You'd argue,
I feel like the generation before that was the best generation.
So your
ever.
Ranking would go current gen, Xbox, PS2, and then Super Nintendo, Genesis?
No, I think...
Or PS1,
so yeah,
N64,
I'm sorry.
You're saying the Super Nintendo, Genesis generation is the fourth best generation of gaming? Shut your fucking face.
And I think that's fine.
There's no way.
I think that's fine.
But it's wrong. It's not just, fine.
No, this is not, exactly, it's not wrong because, you know what, either, that was a great generation, and I think we
Mega
are
Man's
so,
going to kick your ass.
We are
Jeff,
so
you are not
fortunate.
Allowed to shake your head when you spend 33 minutes talking about a card game.
We are so fortunate.
You haven't played it.
It's not on this gen.
We are so
on
fortunate
gen.
To be fans of a medium where things have been getting better continuously.
Well, it's one of the reasons we gripe so much because it gets out of control.
This is the same argument that you hear sports talk radio get into of like, LeBron is the greatest player of all time. There's never been anyone of his size and speed and skill. And there's people like, wait, what the fuck?
Dude, PlayStation 2 is juicing.
Everybody said that about Jordan. And everybody said that about Kareem. And everybody said that about Wilt. It's like,
no.
It's the best of their time. It doesn't have to be compared against the best of the other time.
People don't say that about sports. People say Jordan is the best and people are overlooked.
This just happened. Back me up on this, Garnett. Back me up on this. They literally, for 2 weeks at the end of last season, when they won again,
there's been a lot of Bron riding.
There was a lot of like, don't people remember Jordan? Nobody remembers Jordan.
No, that's just filling a 24-hour sports news cycle. This is different. This is
me filling 2 hours of this show.
Well, let's be honest, an hour and 27 minutes because we talked about a card game for 35 minutes.
You haven't played it. You haven't played it. It's really good.
He's not going to let that go.
It's Blizzard's new game, and it's really good.
Okay, it almost says, not going
to
go there.
Blizzard's a major company. Need to be covered.
Yes, you can sit there and nitpick that people, it has a recency, so that's why people like it. But I feel like most gamers would argue it's the Genesis, Super NES era, Super NES, Genesis era. I don't know, I'm just, listeners, do you think Xbox, PS2 is the best?
They can't answer you, dude.
Yes, they can, because I actually pay attention to fan feedback and reply to them. And I don't shy away when
I'm with Andrew from a sort of, like philosophical point of view of looking back and saying, yeah, you know what? I mean, having witnessed all these transitions, like, I feel like we've had these conversations and thinking about it here and hearing you talk about it really puts in perspective. Yeah, we've had some great advances in new areas that we've been hoping for a long time, specifically, you know, storytelling and new manners of interactivity. I, for whatever reason, you know, still for me look back and feel, although it's sort of an outlier and created its own world, that that to me Dreamcast sits in its own space as this high point for me of, you know, a game generation. There was something about the games on that platform and what it represented and where it sit in, but it was weird because it defied generation definition, right?
It
kind of sat.
It can go in either or.
Yeah,
you know? No, the sad really part is it went in neither.
And it, well, that's pretty true. Is it actually really went into neither? And then looking back, I mean, it's really hard for me to deny the power of PlayStation. That was PlayStation 2. I mean, PlayStation 2 just so.
But once again, you know, PlayStation. There were amazing games on PlayStation 2. But you know, even I would say GameCube and Xbox One
that's
had
the
amazing
one you're
games.
I had a joke.
But
it was a launch game.
This generation satisfied so many. You can be any type of gamer. You want to be the retro gamer. There's Super Meat Boy. There's Hotline Miami.
But that's just because back then there was no such thing as retro because you were in what is retro.
No, there was Pong or whatever. But that's what
Pong
makes it
DX,
better.
Pong DX 2.
I mean, Christian's argument does make sense in that I think the SNES era reached the sort of the pinnacle of 2D gaming, and that's why EA refers to the upcoming generation as Gen 4, ignoring every generation that's happened before the 3D transition.
And we ignored that pixel type of gaming for so we were like, polygons, let it up. You didn't see, you could have pushed out some like Spelunky could have come out on Xbox One, but it didn't.
And now
people are accepting and making
great
games.
And I think, one of the great things about this generation is that not only are we having incredible 3D games, but we saw a resurgence of 2D games that can take what was learned in the 16-bit era and really refine it using modern.
I think you guys
technology.
Are missing... That's missing
I really agree with you on that.
I think you guys are missing the biggest point that could bolster your argument. And that is, this is the generation where the internet came into its own in across gaming in the sense that the reason we didn't have retro before is because there was no way for a dude in his garage to make a game for a very large period of gaming history unless they were putting it out, you know, in some really unorthodox way.
But let's think about it from a raw achievement standpoint.
Let's not
forget. Call of Duty era is this generation. I mean, that is such a monumental impact on video games.
But let's not forget the PS1 era where, you know, you had teams of like three or four, maybe like eight people working on games like Crash Bandicoot or Mr. Mosquito. Remember that game? You know,
but I agree with you, Jeff.
And that like indie spirit
Shut
was so much more.
Shut the fuck up, Christian.
I agree with
that
too.
Indie spirit was so much more prevalent in the PS1 era because they were regular retail games.
You had Net Eurozé.
Yeah. So I think
that was a decade ago.
I think if anything, it's the PS2 and the PS3 era because of the ballooning budgets and, you know, requirement for massive teams to work on games. It became harder to make those quirky games.
Yeah, that's true.
So what I'm looking forward to in the PS4 and Xbox One generation is this openness where, hey, remember the 32-bit era where teams of two people can make games? Well, that's going to happen
again. Well, that's what's so exciting about these Gamescom conferences, both Xbox and PS4. These guys coming out and going, hey, indie developers, come over here. Be on our system. We want to make it easier for you. Easier. Both of them showed these video packages of single dudes making games going, this is what I want. It's like, those single guys, those individuals making games are making demands of these multi-billion-dollar corporations.
And the corporations
are
listening.
Going, sure, whatever
listening.
You guys want. Whatever you want.
Because we've pushed them to listen, and that's awesome.
But it's also because they can do 10 of those for a fraction of the cost of what Killzone costs.
Well, for sure.
So, I mean, it's like, yeah, they're making demands. And I want, how much money do you want to make this game? I'm going to go big. I want $300,000. Somebody's like, oh, fuck. I mean, $250,000.
Well, I don't know.
But at the same time,
you're throwing out numbers that have
at the same time.
No, those are true. Those are real numbers, Jeff.
those are at the same time. Think about the amount of money that Microsoft spent to get the announcement it made at Gamescom that every European pre-order of Xbox One gets FIFA 14. That is crazy. That is unreal.
Super Mario World. That is Super Mario World.
Well, that is, we have a lot of consoles ready to go. We got to get these pre-order numbers up. But it's fucking huge.
That is the hugest announcement. I mean, and Andrew asked me, do you think they'll do something like that in North America? I don't think so. I don't think they need to. I don't know what they'll do. I mean,
Americans would be like, what's FIFA?
But I mean, that's such a move for them to get.
I'm not.
Do not underestimate how valuable that is.
Does one of the F stand for soccer?
All right. You guys are all jokers. How about we do finishing moves then?
Sounds good.
All right.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, everybody. I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to give you two, but I'm going to rock through them really quick. This past week, League of Legends suffered a significant security breach. So you've probably already heard, especially if you're a LoL player. But if you haven't, for some reason, get in there and change your login information. It's a good time to get a little reminder. This one was sent out as an email to a lot of members of the press. For security basics from JD Sherry, who is a vice president at Trend Micro. So keep these things in mind. Do things like keep your gaming PC and device current with current operating system and application patches.
Unless that operating system is Windows 8.
So in other words, make sure your Java, Windows, and Adobe is up to date. Change your passwords to your system and online gaming communities with frequency, like every 3 to 6 months. If you notice suspicious activity, change your password. If possible, don't store any personally sensitive data like your social security number, your home address, your date of birth that hackers could be used for fraud. If you have to retain a form of payment to participate, use a credit card, not a debit card, and one preferably with a virtual account number. Run frequent security scans on your system to ensure you don't have malicious programs like keyloggers and that sort of thing on there. And frequent user forums to raise your awareness regarding security issues. So stay active in the community so you hear about these things right away and can respond quickly. And finally, to use a prepaid cash card for in-game transactions. Anyway, just use common sense and think about these things. If you don't think about it, a lot of times when something like League of Legends gets breached, it's a good reminder to use common sense and good standard operating procedures to protect yourself. Then point number two, remember that little game Rider Rumble that was the first mobile game that Gamefly put out?
Pretty fun game.
Well, and props to Gion and Chris at Feel Every Yummy for banging through this. It's now free. It's free to play. We have taken it free to play. You'll get two of the six characters for free. It was actually free to play last week, but we had a little bug in our iPhone 5 screen, so we fixed that. I was sitting here, I was very happy. While we were recording, I got the update from Apple that the patch has been approved and has been pushed out. So what you'll get right now is the patched, updated version, free to play, Rider Rumble. And I don't know, that's it. Just go have fun with it.
I like it. I liked it before you published it.
PAX 10 game from 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
See, this is why I need to be a PAX so I can find more new games, but sad. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you play it and have fun with it. And if you do, you know, buy the characters. And if you don't, well, I don't know. Don't leave a nasty review on iTunes. God, here's what's funny. We had a review, literally one of the first reviews, I wish you could respond to iTunes review. One of the very first reviews was a 1-star review because we only gave you 2 of the 6 characters for free and you had to buy the other 4 for 99 cents. Hmm. I'm like, we're giving you the game for free and 2 players. Like, what do you want me to do?
I'm sorry. I just thought that deserved a 1-star review.
That's a 1-star review. Like, hold on. I'll send Gion and Chris over for dinner since apparently everything should be free. I don't know what else to do, you know? Anyway, sorry. It's tough. I wish I could just write back and say, guys, we love you. We'd love to. Like, we gave
all right.
You
finishing
game.
Move finished.
Finished. All right.
Fine. I'll go.
Hearthstone.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of this game? Very cool. Gen Con is happening right now. Which is the
so many gens.
One of the great board gaming conventions in America.
I thought it was gonna be like a Jennifer Aniston convention.
No, that's GenyCon.
Oh.
So many awesome games to be excited about, but one that may be of interest to you guys is the Witcher adventure game, which just got leaked. Look at the board. Look how cool that is. Designed by
a
designer whose name I will only destroy.
Because it's probably
Ignacy Trzewizik.
I'm not even gonna try that.
Let's make this a game. Ignacy Truistic. It's like if you say the name backwards.
I-C-Z-E-K. If you have two Z's in your name.
Designed by Enrique Iglesias.
Anyway, he is an awesome designer. He designed a game called the Robinson Crusoe, the adventure something island, I think. Amazing cooperative, hugely complex cooperative game that simulates being stranded on a desert island with all the variations that involves building weapons shelter and hunting and all these crazy things. Incredibly complex, deep co-op game. So the fact that he is the designer of this, the Witcher people adventure game, it makes me frothing at the mouth to try it. So check out news about Gen Con, because there's a lot of really cool board games that were just announced there. That's a big place to announce them, and I'm excited, and you should be too. I'm also excited about the Diablo expansion, but we'll talk about that next week, hopefully.
All right, Andrew.
All right, this is going to have a very limited appeal, but Prime and Beyond.
But I'm reviewing beds.
Prime and Beyond is my favorite steakhouse in New York. It's really just trumped all the other ones, and it's located on 10th and 4th on the Lower East Side in Manhattan. There's also Fort Lee, New Jersey location, which is the original. And it's a Korean-owned steakhouse, which is sort of like the gimmick, but I don't want people to think, oh, well, that means Korean barbecue. No, it's like a legit American steakhouse. They just, you know, have, I don't know if you've all been to Korean restaurants before, but you get like tons of sides called banchan. So you get tons of sides for free whenever you order something, and the service is incredible. And they are the only other steakhouse that uses the same supplier as Peter Luger. So you're getting Peter Luger steak for a fraction of the price with incredible service. And when I went there, they invited me to go down to the meat locker to see where they aged their steak.
And that was the last anyone ever saw him.
And the butcher was there. He's actually the owner of the restaurant. He was there cutting up the steak. He comes out of the locker with the steak on the plate, and we're just talking. And his glasses are fogged up because of the difference in humidity.
It's human meat.
So
and then we find the body.
So he sort of looks like an anime character, and we're just talking about the steak. It's one of the best meals I've ever had in my life.
You had a moment.
I want everyone that's in New York to know about this place. Granted, I don't know how many New York listeners we have on this show.
A lot of people there.
But Prime and Beyond, it is excellent, incredible. You definitely have to go. So that's my very
makes me
upbeat.
Want to go to New York.
Well done, sir.
Finishing move.
Christian.
Super simple. They listen to this seldomly, but they're going to be driving, going back to Texas right here right now. But I just wanted to tell my parents I love them. I think sometimes it's fun to hear that in a place you don't expect it. So if they happen to be listening to this
episode. They listen to this show?
Sometimes they do. Even when I'm not on it.
Jeff, scarily,
sometimes they do.
My mom listens to this show.
Your mom listens to this show.
Well, I want to tell Garnet's mom that he does not love her. With the second
scares
part.
Me to death to hear her, to think that she hears some of the things come out of my mouth. It's like, oh my God.
But I think sometimes it's fun to say in unexpected places, tell people that you care about, that you love them. And so I thought, if they listen to this will be funny. I'll hear about it like a month. Like, we were listening to the show about games, and we love...
Not only would they have to listen to this, they'd have to get to the end. That's impressive.
Especially after the way the show started. Thanks, Jeff.
I bet your parents would love Hearthstone.
And if you're in LA, September 12th is our next improv versus stand-up at UCB with Pete Holmes, Eric Myers, who has a new special. It's on Netflix either now, or it's an hour special, Dopeless Romantic, and a great improv team, Team Robot and the Accidental Party. They've won a cage match for over a year, and a cage match is like two improv teams go and the audience votes, and they've won every week for over a year, and it'll be their first time doing improv or stand-up. So if you're in LA, come out, say hi. It's always great to see every single show we've done at UCB. I've seen at least one weekend confirmed listener at the show. That's
really
awesome. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's cool.
Well, thanks, everybody. Next week, Diablo 3 expansion pack, which you want to talk about. Some Madden we'll talk about. I don't know. There's still lots of games we haven't gotten to. Are you going to play the Saints Row? Everyone in the hype for the Saints Row? What are you going to play this weekend? What do you tease people with what you're going to be talking about next
week? I might be playing WoW and Hearthstone. But I want to play Saints Row. Here's the thing about Saints Row 4. I feel like I would really love it for like an hour. Mm-hmm. And then
lose interest because it's just a big playpen.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that, but I don't know if that's worth $50 for me.
Well, in the interest of keeping the show going, maybe I'll take Splinter Cell home over the weekend so we have some new content.
Should.
I know we need to get some new content going. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, of course, to Christian for coming in. Appreciate it, dude. Hopefully we'll have you back very soon. Del Rio, Jamie here in the studio booth, taking care of us on the boards. That's it, folks. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we're Ghost. Get real. We're taking it over, baby. Check it out. Come on. They said I never made it. They called me Zip Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip hop hero. There was a time when I was riding the line. But then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swag with my sick ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up from promoters overseas. Find me out, put me up in the condo. No complaints when I'm done with my show. I'm grateful for every single one of y'all. Without your ears, I wouldn't be playing this game at all. We didn't invent it, but we're bringing it here. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.